Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Dirt everywhere. Well, at least I'm home. I can follow my intellectual pursuits. I offer records covered in bubble gum. A collection of rare, incurable diseases! Violated! No! My dinosaur droppings! Painted like Easter eggs! Ah! You idiots! Oh, what I'm gonna do to you. I'm so angry. First, I'm gonna tear your lips out. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. And then I'm gonna gouge your eyes out. And you want to know what else? I'm gonna hit you, and you're gonna fall. And I'm gonna look down, and I'm gonna laugh. But first, I gotta take a whiz.
It is 28 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of February in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district in glorious, fantastical, bedazzled southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. Thank you for coming along. If you'd like to join us today via the telephone, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can email if you like, if that's your pleasure, if that's what floats your boat, if that's what makes your life worthwhile, if that's really the sort of thing that satisfies whatever peculiar need might lurk within your soul and heart, you can do it. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be emailed as well. That is Dawn, D-A-W-N, Dawn at RickEmerson.com. Text box open on the website. Also with Skype, that is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. That's the username there. All one word. Rick Emerson Show. It's coming up on this very fine Friday. We have your Hick Watch today, Taser Watch, and Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Week Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and legacy of the one and only Miss Lucille Ball. That's coming up today. Humor Week Comedy 101 with Big Jim Willig. Also, clue number 5 in the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. Today being Friday, we'll get your fifth clue for the week. And if you are the first person to correctly identify the snack in question after the outgiving of said clue via snack at rickemerson.com, you will win yourself a big fistful, a bagful, stuff from E.H. Fending. So that right there. And that's just the stuff that we're planning to do. That's just the stuff that we're that's sort of written down or that's scheduled. That's not even counting like the 5 million things that really that we're not planning. We don't anticipate that we have, in fact, no foreknowledge of and that are probably ill-advised in almost every way, but that we will nonetheless convey to you. I mean, that's
I'm tired already.
That's what I'm saying. It's the magic of the show, Dawn. It is the mixture of what is known and what is unknown, what is anticipated and what is surprising. It lies between the pit of man's fears, Dawn, and the summit of his knowledge. The crux of the Rick Emerson Show's amusement value. Dawn Taylor, in addition to all of the above, what headlines are you working on for the good people of Portland, Oregon?
That's a good question, Rick Emerson.
Let's make something up. They'll never know.
We've got a man who was beaten by Prince fans after he caught a guitar. We have Google tweaking their algorithm. And lots of Charlie Sheen sound.
Excellent. Yeah, I got our good friend Siegfried sent me like 19 hours of Charlie Sheen on the Alex Jones Show, just doing what Charlie Sheen now does. By the way, you know, we had that story the other day of it was Martin Sheen and Emilio. Is it Estevez or Estevez? Where do you put the accent there? What syllable?
I say Estevez. It's probably Estevez if you're speaking proper Espanol.
If you're in Spain.
But I think most of us say
you've
Estevez.
You've never sounded more like the mom in Better Off Dead. If you're going to be or Peggy Hill, quite possibly. If you're going to be speaking Espanol, I have tamale pie for everybody. All right. Well, not even. All right. So, but we have some sound on this. But we had that. I guess maybe it was two or three days ago, where Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez were talking about the. You know, Martin Sheen was being that. You know, he's being the being dad, and he's trying to be trying to put the best possible face on really what is just. I mean, it's a yeoman's job to try to put a good face in the Charlie situation. But Martin Sheen, you know, he gave it the college try. He said that it was, you know, he said it's having a disease like cancer. And, you know, if you had somebody in your family who was stricken with cancer, you would, you know, offer them sympathy and support and realize that some of the things they did were beyond their behavior. And then Emilio Estevez just said, like, God, I don't know, it's been like 30 years of this crap. What do you want from me?
Yeah, he basically said, yeah, you know, we've been dealing with this crazy for 30 years.
So I saw a photograph, though. I saw an image from when they gave that interview, and they look exactly like they sound. Martin Sheen looks concerned, you know, and a little weary, you know. He looks a little tired, like he's been up for a few nights, and but he looks concerned, and he looks very, like, thoughtful, and he's given it a great deal of consideration. And then Emilio Estevez is basically just looking off camera. He's just sort of, at one point, he's just sort of, like, looking down and kind of, kind of playing with his fingernails and just sort of waiting for the interview to be over.
Well, how many times can you be asked about your crazy brother before you just kind of go... And before that, it was like a crazy girlfriend.
Right.
Because he was with Demi Moore and with Paula Abdul for years.
Emilio Estevez was?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Well done.
In fact, apparently the whole thing with Paula Abdul was that he got set up with her. She was a Laker girl at the time.
Right.
And he pulled his sort of hot 80s Sheen brother cred and was able to go, someone acquire me that Laker girl.
Bring her to me.
And they were together for a while. But apparently he had a thing for chicks with crazy chicks with eating disorders.
Is that Demi Moore?
Demi Moore had was crazy and had an eating disorder as well. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Good for her. I knew there was a reason I liked her. So if you get a chance to go watch the interview of them actually, you know, saying that stuff, it's fantastic because their body language just... It just sells it all. I mean, it gives the whole... Because if you're Emilio Estevez, I'm not saying he's, you know, he's a guy, you know, he's not an unknown, but it also, you know, he's trying to reestablish himself as a sort of... He's trying to rebrand himself because, you know, he's known as the Brat Pack actor and whatever. And he wrote and directed that Bobby movie, which was not all that great, but I got to give the guy props for trying to do something. He's trying to sort of... He is trying to move into the next phase of his career, into the second act of his Hollywood life, which is a difficult thing to do, especially if you are overshadowed by Martin Sheen. If your dad is one of the great actors of the late 20th century, it's got to be a little bit difficult. But now, every time he gets on camera, it's like they just wanted to ask him about his brother and having a suitcase full of blow and 19 horrors stuffed into a trunk that he's taken to the Bahamas with him. So that's got to get a little bit taxing. You know, and
yeah.
plus, don't you just figure that it's just a matter of time before you're just going to go home and Charlie Sheen is like burgling your, you know, he's burgling your place, just going after the good china.
Well, that's probably happened. How many times do you think, you know, Emilio Estevez has come home and like a window was jimmied open and Charlie was just like face down in the kitchen floor in a puddle of his own sick?
Many, many times. All right. I don't even know where to start today. There's just so much crap going on. I'm exhausted, first of all. Can I just tell you that?
Tell me how exhausted you are.
Tell me
about your pain.
I don't even really know that I have anything to compare it to. And I don't
tell
really have
your dreams.
I don't have anything in particular on which to blame it is the other thing. It's not like I'm underslept, and also I'm not overslept. I didn't do that thing of getting too much sleep. I got, I don't know, the amount that I typically get that after which I feel fine. In other words, there is nothing about my sleeping pattern is different than it is most of the time. It's not like one of those weeks where I had to go like 3-4 nights in a row getting like 2 hours of sleep or none. It's also not a thing where like, I'm going to catch up by sleeping for 74 hours. And then afterward, you're just feeling all wonkified in the head. I got no real reason for this. And yet it persists. I will say that. So I woke up this morning. I don't know if you do this. Do you sleep with, now? Do you have your iPhone next to your bed?
No.
Like a precious gem.
Not at night. Usually at night, I have it in the bathroom, plugged into a wall, charging.
A wall of charging?
Plugged into the wall and charging.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like a bag of holding or something you had installed in your
home.
I have it on the
table next to me generally for naps, because then I'm...
It's like an alarm or something?
As an alarm. And also, I use the white noise thing on
it
sometimes.
So I got this. So I have this like alarm app that I use, which is great, and then it has like a comforting 1980s style digital display. So, but long before even I had this, even when I had the BlackBerry, I would use it as my alarm clock. But as a result, I've developed this sort of tick over the years of, which I guess is helpful in many cases, of the first. I mean, I have become that guy, or I became that guy, I guess, years ago. The first thing I do in the morning, when the alarm goes off or I wake up, is before my feet have even hit the floor, I just reach over and grab my phone or my BlackBerry or whatever, and I just start scanning my email to see what has come in during the night. And I've done that for probably 3 or 4 years now, which maybe is, I don't even know that it's unhealthy. It seems like that is when you have crossed some sort of threshold into your head, where you were just such a loser. I mean, the first thing you're doing, I mean, here's the only comfort I can give myself is that I do not enable a function on this alarm clock app that I have, which I swear to God will wake you with either, at your choice, it will wake you with either a scroll on the screen, or in fact the like Stephen Hawking voice reading all of your new Facebook wall posts to you, where you can actually be woken by that. Where like 7 a.m.
Oh,
it's, you know, John says, "I love toast." You know, Sarah says, "Today taping Blazers show, trying to vomit beforehand so as to look as thin as possible for television," or whatever. And it's just all of the things have been posted to your Facebook wall or whatever. And it'll wake you to that, or like greet you with a scrolling ticker of that on the screen. I don't have that turned on, so that's the small comfort I can give myself. But I do wake up. And it's like those guys who just, you know, those guys who wake up and they reach for a cigarette first thing. Or like, if maybe you've had a roommate at some point who always, you know, he would just barely get out of bed and it's like he was reaching for the bong. Sometimes not even getting out of the bed. It's like he would just, you know, "What are you doing, Bob?" "Well, I got to hit this before I can even get up." So I have now become that way with my iPhone. But I wake up this morning at, you know, whatever, like my normal time is like 8:30 or something. And I reach over and I look at the thing. And so my wife is out of town. She's in the glorious, thriving metropolis of Tacoma, coming home this afternoon. So she sent me this voicemail this morning, and to her credit, I mean, she did it as early as possible. I mean, she woke up and she sent this to me. She called, you know, directly into my voicemail, and she left me a thing at like 6:30 or whatever. And she apologized profusely. But, you know, we've been having this issue with the goddamn mother effing refrigerator not working. And so the question is, like, when is the guy going to come and fix it? Well, apparently that is happening, like, now. And so she called and she left me this message this morning. She's like, "Hey, by the way, the landlord's going to be coming by, and I really apologize for giving you this at the last moment. I don't mean to blindside you with this. But he's going to be at the house at, like, 9 a.m., and so you'll need to take everything out of the refrigerator, everything out of the freezer, and you'll need to sort what we can keep and what has to be thrown away and what we can put outside and preserve with just the normal, you know, the 35-degree temperature in Portland, and what we're, you know, what can be put out in the, you know, in the basement so that Max isn't going to get into it." And I'm looking at the clock, and it's, like, 8:42, and I have not even stepped out of bed, much less ingested caffeine or put on, you know, pants. And she's telling me that I have 18 minutes until the landlord is at the house to have emptied out and sorted all of the many things in the refrigerator. So that was what greeted with me this morning. So I don't even know that it's not like I got less sleep. But it is that thing. It's not unlike, you know, waking up late for something. When you wake up and you've overslept, and you're like, "Oh, my God, I got to be there in like 2 minutes," where you have no time to acclimate or adjust. And it's almost like interrupting your REM cycle in a strange way.
For me, the big thing is that I can't be agitated too early in the morning.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that I have to get a little coffee in me. I have to have that sort of buffer period, you know, about 15 minutes to a half an hour of just like, okay, you know, I'm not sleeping now, and I'm out in the world. And we've had conversations occasionally, not very often, but every once in a while, where I've gotten up in the morning and Patrick will either be like, you know, in kind of a cranky mood, or he's mad at me about something I did.
The cat's on fire.
Or he's just, I don't know what it is. I just take something the wrong way. But I have been known on occasion to just like look at him and go, don't screw with me before I have coffee. You know, and so.
We have an unspoken rule. Well, it's actually not unspoken. It's a thing that is spoken about every 3 months because that's when one of us will forget it and then disaster ensues. A sort of understanding that you can't. Same thing where you can't talk to the other person or much less like start an argument or even bring up a problem until they are properly caffeinated.
Right.
And I mean, that's a thing that I, and I'm not going to say that I remember it more often than Laura, but I just think that because I'm more of a caffeine junkie, I think I am when she forgets that rule, things go a lot worse than when I forget the rule. Because if I try to bring up some, you know, oh my God, there's this horrible thing that happened with Max. And by the way, the guy's raising the rent and also the fridge isn't working again. And hey, we have to, you know, be at lunch. And she's just like, you know, give me like 5 minutes just to go downstairs for a second. When she brings it up to me, you know, like she'll forget about it and I'll get out of bed in the morning and she just launches it in me with something that's got to be handled. And I just turn into a raging dick. I mean, there's just no getting around it. I just turn into a complete ass. I am a horrible person. Every now and again, and this happened last Sunday, she's working this graveyard shift thing where she's more like 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. or something like that. But it was some weird thing where she was up at some ungodly hour. Basically, she was up right about when I was getting ready to go to bed. And I was at the end of my caffeine cycle for the day. She had gotten up and had not had any caffeine yet. And we each had something that had sort of been irritating us over the course of the day. And we both forgot the rule at the same time. And then we were just like screaming at each other about 35 minutes later, you know, you never loved me, you know, and just and finally we just reached that point where we were like, oh, God, we're doing that. And to our credit, we actually realized it before one of us stomped out the door, though. Before she went off to work, we sort of went, oh, we're doing that thing. Oh, sorry. And we instantly did the whole, like, I take back everything I've said in the last 32 minutes. I'm sorry about that. But, I mean, those are bad mornings. I don't even have that to blame it on, though. I just woke up and there was just a thing telling me I got to clean out the fridge, which she did apologize for, but still. So then I'm in the kitchen just like, you know, and then I'm, and it's like I said that there wasn't a whole lot in the freezer or fridge that was going to go bad or rot or something. And I thought that was the case. But there were some things sort of hidden from view that had I known they were there, I would have either thrown them out earlier or, you know, gone to the store and gotten some stuff and put them in an ice chest. But I didn't really think there was anything that necessitated that. I thought that at worst, we're going to lose like a head of lettuce, you know, and then like her soy milk, which I don't care about. There was really nothing that was affecting me or my life. What I did not know was that in the freezer, there was this like whole bag of just like, I don't know, it was just like a bag of kale or something she'd frozen. But then behind that was like all of this fruit that she had put in the freezer. And so what I ended up with this morning was a lot of bags where the fruit had actually gone bad, had rotted.
Oh.
And it had rotted, here's the thing though, had rotted to such an extent that the bags were like overcooked sausages where the casings were just about to burst.
Oh, God.
Now, they had not exploded, but I swear to God.
But you're very gingerly carrying them so that you don't accidentally burst it while you're on your way to trash.
They were like mini Hindenburgs filled with blueberries.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, literally putting them very carefully into other Glad bags and then going and sealing them immediately. It's like a dye pack from the bank. So they were to go. And there was like five or six of those where the bags, it's like I could just hear them like stretching, like just waiting to explode. And like it would have been like the thing from the bank. If I had just squeezed one of them ever so slightly or had just grazed it with my fingernail, it would have been like a cascade of mango bits just all over my face, the kitchen, the ceiling, rotted at that.
Oh boy.
So that was my. And then what is the single worst thing that could go bad? Here's a hint, you alluded to it yesterday.
Chicken?
Yes. So in the back, a lot of Tupperware. And when I said Tupperware, I don't mean like your actual Tupperware. I mean like your dollar store,
yeah. You
know, like something you just got at the bottom shelf at a Woolworths of not just chicken. In fact, like chicken broth and fat that she was saving to cook with, and she'll make like a what do you call it? I guess maybe broth, but it's like a reduction.
Yeah.
And so then she'll make it like a soup with, or she'll cook like if she's cooking like especially like Mexican food, she'll use some of that. And so there was like four or five things of basically just chicken fat that have just gone bad and been rotting for like a week in the back of the fridge. And again, the same thing, where it's this Tupperware, and then it's actually, and at any moment you know that they're just waiting to explode, and the lid is just going to go like, boom, and just blow off like a cork out of a champagne bottle. And it is to my credit that none of that happened. But then you're having to handle everything like it's a nuclear isotope.
I'm surprised you weren't, like, smelling any of this in your kitchen
well,
at all.
Well, because it was chicken stuff or the, you know, vegetables inside a bag or inside a thing sealed inside the freezer.
Okay.
Which, now here's the thing about the freezer. It's not like the freezer didn't work in the sense of the door seal. I mean, it was also, I mean, when I, don't get me wrong, when I opened the freezer, there was a mighty funk that came out of there. But it's like I haven't opened in the freezer. Why? Because it wasn't working. So the freezer wasn't working in the sense that it didn't freeze, but the smells did more or less stay contained within. I would have removed the stuff if I'd known it was there, but it was just hidden by this wall of kale. So anyway, so that's how my morning started. It was just a whole, just a whole thing. Mm. So, by the way, I have a question about something.
Okay.
You know, it was yesterday, or I guess it was yesterday. You were sitting there before the show. You were listening to the sounds of Jeff Lynne and his Electric Light Orchestra trying to boost your mood because you were feeling inexplicably sort of sad and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then this morning, as many of our listeners might have predicted, this morning you revealed that it was, in fact, nature's special time.
Yes.
And you said, well, I had that unexpected sadness that comes with the bout of lady time. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
You're now, I don't know, 27, 28 years old. Should it be unexpected at this point?
Well,
I'm not trying to poke. I'm just asking. I'm curious.
I never got into the habit of actually, my mother, when I first started having my magical celebration of womanness.
Yes.
My mother had me do this whole thing of like, then you keep track on the calendar of when it is. So, you know, it's 28 days left. But the thing is, for most of my young adult life, I was wildly
irregular. Cycle.
It would be anywhere from, and it wasn't even close to 1 month. It was like anywhere from 32 to like 43 or 44 days. So anywhere from like 4.5 to 6 weeks. And it could come anywhere in there. There was just no way of predicting it. So basically, there was no point in really keeping track. And I could tell that I basically knew that it was on its way because I generally have really good skin, but that's about the only time I ever break out. I would get a pimple right by one of my eyebrows. There's a spot right by my mouth right here.
Oh no.
My chin and I would get like this I'll get a pimple like a day or so before.
And you know that's the tell.
Yeah.
That's how you know.
And now I'm much more regular, but I just never really got in the habit of keeping track. So it still takes me a little by surprise, but it almost never takes my husband by surprise because he has learned. He's like the period whisperer. It's like he just knows.
He's one of those dogs that can smell cancer.
And we'll just, something will happen, and we'll have some kind of a stupid fight about something, and I'll be like really emotional. And he learned after a few years not to do this anymore, but he would go, well, Don, do you think maybe it's possible you're overreacting about this because maybe you're going to start your period soon? I'd be like, shut up!
Yeah, that's the
don't
wrong
you dare
time
say
to point
that.
Out. That is totally the wrong time.
Don't
to
you disregard my feelings. And then the next day, boom, like clockwork. Yes, I would start. And then I'd have to go, all right.
See, that's the
I
irony.
I started my period.
The irony, though, is that the time when it would be most beneficial to point that out is the time that men can't point it out. I think that's what's so frustrating to men. Is that, like, the time that it's true is the time that you can never go, like, well, look, you're just crazy because you're on your period. You know, and it's like you want to be able to say that not to be a jackass, but because I think the thing about men is that men, not only do they be shopping less, but the thing is that men are like all about solving the problem. And I don't mean that women aren't, but women to some degree, I think, are less goal-oriented than men. For example, every guy has had this, where a woman comes home and she's going, and then my manager came by and said that she didn't know that I was going to get the raise that I thought I was going to get after 2 quarters of work there, and it's because it turns out the raise isn't automatic, it's based on performance, and my performance has been really, really great, and then Janice, who works on the other floor, she got the raise last quarter, and the guy's hearing it, and the guy's going, okay, great, and then the guy says this, the guy goes,
well, this is what you got to do.
This is, here's how you solve the problem, which seems, you know, like, then you find out later, she didn't really care about solving the problem. She just wanted to, like, emote all over you. That was the thing.
Yeah.
Like, she just wanted to sort of vent. And I'm not trying to mock that. I mean, I understand this whole show is venting, basically. But guys vent, and then they go, so that sucks, and so here's how I can fix it. And it's like women sometimes, they don't want to fix it, or at least they don't want to talk about it right then. They just want to do the venting part. But guys, so it's like when they hear that, like, you know, there's something in your voice that, like, it might be... you might be riding the cotton pony. They want to, you know, they just go, okay, well, look, just so we can proceed in a rational, logical fashion, are you crazy because you're on your period? And then we would go, shut up! You know, and you're just like, okay, I'm sorry, I've got to go. Which sucks, because that's when it would be the most useful to have everybody aware of that.
Well, the thing that's really weird about it, and I can only speak for myself. With me, once the 24-hour period before, I don't feel any different. I don't physically feel any different. Nothing seems wrong. And I don't feel like there's anything crazy going on in my head. So it really feels like genuine emotion. Once I actually like start, once the the cramps kick in and all of the physical stuff hits, I feel physically like crap, and I can also feel like the flood of crazy hormones and chemicals into my head. Because then there's stuff going on that first day of me, like, which is where I'm at today, of just like feeling physically miserable, but also just having weird things like I have trouble driving. And I'm really an excellent driver.
This explains so much.
I'm a very good driver. I pride myself on the fact that, you know, I learned in the mean streets of Los Angeles, and, you know, I actually taught Patrick how to drive stick.
Right.
And I'm an excellent driver, except for that one day a month when I first started, and it's like not like I'm dangerous or anything. It's just things like I will be driving somewhere I go like every day, like work or home. And I'll drive right past my freeway off-ramp and then just go, oh, crap, I was supposed to go there. And then I'll get where I'm going and go to, like, parallel park and realize and have this moment where I suddenly think, I don't remember how to parallel park.
How do I do this?
And it's crazy. It's just weird. And it all has something to do with just, like, this flood of insane lady chemicals going into my head.
Well, and then you also have the thing of having to, like... Then you also, if you're you especially, you have the thing of going, I'm like, God damn it, I'm just becoming that woman who can't drive.
Yeah.
Christ. Where it sucks because then you are the caricature. You are the stereotype for that one day.
But once that first 24 hours is over, then it's just everything's, you know, other than the ickiness, everything's back to normal. But I do have that, like, a definite, you know, arc for about 36 to 48 hours of just, like, don't know I'm crazy, acting a little crazy, then, oh, crap, I feel terrible, can't drive.
Yeah, it's... Well, this is probably a discussion we should... I had a whole other thing I was going to say about... but really, this is going to be too much period talk. And we've got to just move on.
Oh, come on.
No, I...
We talk about penises all the time.
Well, what I was going to say is... Here's my thing is I... You had, we were talking about this one time. I said that I don't say I pride myself because that means that, like... That means that, like, it's like I've unlocked an achievement on Xbox or something, and I get like a Menzies badge, which isn't really the case. Although, hey, if there was one of those, you know, whatever. I mean, it's whatever makes people feel good about themselves, I suppose.
As Dave Foley said, and that one Kids in the Hall said, you are a man who is okay with menstruation.
Well, it's like the thing I've mentioned that I guess maybe it is a little bit of a point of pride because I try not to be a jackass. Like, I try not to, you know, here's the thing. It's like, I try not to be just a macho dick about stuff because I know I can be sort of overbearing sometimes about whatever. And I, you know, and
no.
Shut up. Shut up, or you'll get what's good for you. But like, I try not to be the guy who like won't go buy tampons or something. You know, like Laura's just like, you know, like she'll call me, she'll be like, hey, while you're at the store, can you get some tampons? Like, yes, I can. And it's like, and you know, you and it's not like just a, like a, it's not just a gag for like stand up comics. Like, there are guys who just refuse, they just won't. There are just like guys who will not do that, which I just don't get. I mean, really, it seems like if you're threatened by a pliable piece of cotton and plastic, you've probably got other larger problems in your life. So anyway, if she says, like, can you get this? I say, that's fine or whatever. And I also, like, I'm not, like, see, this is where we're bordering on the too much information thing. Like, I am not, and I have never, ever been one of those guys who is grossed out by the whole, you know. The lovemaking during
yes,
that time.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to gross everybody out because I know there are people who just don't want to hear discussion of this in general.
But there are some men that are fine with that, and there are some men that it's just no.
Well, that's the thing. And it's like, I mean, I'm not saying you have to be, you know, not saying it has to be like some sort of a fetish for people or something. Like, well, I can't wait for. But I mean, it's like, you know, the whole thing is, you know, it's. How do I put this? It just seems like in any number of ways, that's likely to be, as you said, a process that leaves you less clean than when you began.
Yeah.
For any number of reasons. And also, like, seriously, what kind of a spineless woman's offering to have relations with you, and you're like, oh, no, it might be messy. I can't. I mean, really?
Well,
is that where we are, men?
My husband can't watch surgeries on fictional dramatic television shows.
Right.
He's not good with blood. And I'm talking even like if I cut myself, he's great about going to get me like a Band-Aid or something. But if he sees like the Kleenex that I've used to damp up all of the blood that's come off of my thumb.
Right.
You know, he blanches. He doesn't deal with it. So the thing is, I could just say with my husband, we don't engage in that particular activity, not because of why there's blood, but simply
just
because
blood, period,
that there is.
So to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. He will go buy me tampons. He's perfectly fine with it. But it's things like, you know, he'll like wave his hand at the trash can if he knows there's some used items in there and go, you're going to take care of that, aren't you? Because he just doesn't want to go anywhere near it. Not because it's menstrual blood, just because it's blood.
Yeah.
He doesn't like blood of any kind.
See, and that's a fair point because then it's not like it's not chick specific. You know, it's like my, like to me, and again, I'm not saying you have to be, you should think it's better or greater. And it's, you know, and so if you end up having to do like an extra load of laundry or whatever, that's just, I guess that sucks. But on the other hand, to me, guys bitching about how, like, well, you know, I'm not gonna be able to hit that for, you know, for a week or so because it's your time. To me, that is like guys who bitch about having to wear a rubber, you know. Whereas, like, some girl, you know, and you're obvious, and plus, if you're that guy, you're obviously a lunk. And
yeah.
So some girl, despite your obvious retardation, a girl is offering to have sexual relations with you. And you're like, I don't know, not if I have to wear this thin sheath of plastic. That just ruins the entire thing. I just,
I know, you're kind of like, really? Do you get so many offers?
Is that
the, you can just pick and choose like that?
The sexing that's offered to you is just so frequent, and it's just so omnipresent, it's ubiquitous that you just, yeah. you just no. If it's even slightly, if it's a slight variation on what I desire at this particular moment, I shun the whole thing. Maybe it's just that I remember my teenage years, and just where like you would see girls walk by and go, oh, maybe someday. But as somebody once said, it's like if you have to wear a Viking helmet and a scuba outfit. You know, but there's still a girl who's going to do you like that. You just you take whatever you need to take for that particular team. You know what I'm saying?
I had a friend who talked about it. I think it was in his blog or something. He mentioned once that like, you know, every once in a while, even with his wife, he's been with his wife for like 10 years or something. And even with his wife, every once in a while, you know, there's always whenever you get the chance to have sex. There's always that 15-year-old you in the back of your head who was sitting alone in your bedroom looking at Playboy magazines and going, I'm never going to get to touch one of these.
Yeah.
So there's always that 15-year-old
awesome.
You who's going, yes, I get to have sex.
No, it's seriously, there is, and that's the thing I think that guys, well, maybe not all guys, but there are a lot of guys, they just sort of, you know, they have that. Or I would say the equivalent is this, if you are a person who's dating and you're not with somebody, you know, in some sort, you don't have a significant other. It's that thing of like, and maybe when you're younger, and maybe more for guys, but where you break up with somebody, you get done by somebody, but you're suddenly single. And then you're like, well, that's it, I guess. That's probably the last time I knew the touch of a lady. That's probably never going to happen again. You feel like you've suckered the last woman who's ever going to fall for it. And you're like, well, I guess I should have really just hit that every chance I could, because clearly I'm never, ever going to be finding another woman who will agree to go to bed with me. That's never going to happen.
You know, women feel that way, too, although we tend to focus more on the emotional aspect of it than just strictly the sex.
No one will ever love me again.
Yeah, because most women, we know we can get laid.
Yeah.
We know that that's possible.
It's always sort of around. Yeah.
You know, you may have to, like, you know,
lower your standards ever so slightly.
Might date below your pay grade a little bit, but still, you know, it's out there. It could happen. It's the whole love thing where you feel like no one is ever going to love me again.
Yeah.
I am never going to have another boyfriend ever. That's just not going to happen.
But see, in a weird way, then it's almost, it almost makes it more awesome when it actually, when you actually meet somebody, or if you're a guy, you're like, I fooled another one. Look at this. God. What a clown this woman is, but all right, you know, whatever. And you just, you know.
What is she thinking?
No, seriously, I'm not saying I'm a burn victim or anything, but I mean, you know, it looks back on one's life and one just goes like, wow, that's just astounding how many dumb women there are in this world, you know?
Well, I know that with Patrick, by the time I met Patrick, I was fully an adult. I'd already been divorced once. I was just out of a year-long live-in relationship that had gone horribly. And, you know, I had actually reached a point where I just kind of went, I don't think this is going to happen again. That's just not going to happen. That's not going to, you know, and then, and he, once I met him and he turned out to not be crazy or a jerk, then I started like, once I got over looking for the red flags in him, then I started having that feeling of like, okay, how long till he figures out he shouldn't be here.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing. Is that that's the other thing that guys, or at least that I have done in my life, and somebody's asking, so does that mean you're attracted to dumb women? No. I'm just, I think what I'm saying is, prospectively, if you're a guy and you look at that sometimes, you think, well, there must be something wrong with her. You know, you're just like, well, you know, like, yeah. There's no... I, as you said, you know, because you think like, you know, I'm never ever, I will never know the sweet touch of a lady, you think when you're a teenager. And then you will sometimes just think, well, okay, well, can't she see that I'm hideous? I mean, there's got to be something. she's got to be effed in the head somehow to not see what a mutant I am. But that is the thing. That is the other thing that I would do where it's like, you know, there would be. And again, women probably have this, but I think maybe to men, because men just because there isn't just like a sex faucet that men can turn on somewhere and like, I wish to have relations tonight, and like women just come pouring out of it. The way that it is for a woman, where you can just go like, somebody strip me, and a guy will offer himself. It's not really that way for most men, and so, but so I think there's that thing that guys have where like you will be with maybe generally or literally like biblically. At that moment, with you are knowing with a capital K, knowing a woman, and you will just think, okay, well, first of all, this woman's way, way too hot to be with me. There's just no. What is that about? I mean, does she? And then you start to think this. You go, well, is it because I? Do I remind her of somebody else? Am I as close as she's able to? Am I the closest she can attain to like somebody else? Or is she doing this? Did she just break up with somebody and this is like a revenge sort of an F kind of a thing? What is the real reason that she's with me right now? Because of course the real reason can't possibly be that she finds you attractive. Because of course you know.
Yeah,
because
you're hideous.
Hideous mutant.
Yeah.
So anyway. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So anyway, so quit your bitching about period sex, guys.
Okay.
Just be, not,
oh, yeah.
not you. I'm
not
saying
me,
for men.
I wasn't. But
no,
yeah.
I'm saying for men. Just, yeah. You know, seriously. Just
yeah, honestly, just put down a towel. Do it, you know. Offer a nice warm washcloth afterwards and enjoy yourself.
And I would just say to this to women. I mean, it's not like I'm some, you know, I'm no Alan Alda or nothing. But really, if I could just speak to women here, that if you're with some guy and it's like he balks at the humping during the period, or especially if he's one of those guys who bitches about wearing a rubber. Like, that's the only, pardon the pun, red flag that you really need. That's like, that's the one strike where you're just like, you are so unworth my time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
Also, keep in mind that many ladies are extra sensitive during that period, so you'll be getting
You mean in a good way?
In a good way.
So
you'll be getting...
it takes three licks to get to the center of the Tootsie
Pop? Right. You'll be far more effective with less effort.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
It's like nature's, you know what it is? It's like nature's lever and pulley system, Don. With much less exertion, you can get the same result.
Exactly.
All right. See why I didn't want to bring that up? Because then it was just a lot of talk about... there's this great
We're
moment.
We're helping our listeners with our wise advice.
Well, it's like Tom Likas used to say. He used to say, like, I have made every mistake imaginable, which is why I am able to tell you. And that's my thing. It's like I have gone through every neuroses, every just, you know, a bit of it, and dated my share of crazy chicks, by the way. So, God, and there's that new James Westby film, which I don't think has actually come out yet. It's screening. It's called Rid of Me. Mm-hmm. He has the greatest use of the word. You know, there's certain words that are just funny, certain words that are just comedically rich for some reason. He has the greatest use in that movie, the word menses. I could give you the context, but it wouldn't make any sense. But there is a moment in the film where they get a little bit of nature's special blood on their person.
Mm.
And the woman actually says the phrase, and she got her menses on me. And it's the use of the word menses that just sells that. It's just like, and there's something about that word. So I, you know, that really was, if nothing else, that was the reason to have this whole discussion. Because it was an opportunity to uncork that word, which comes my way very rarely. All right. It's the Rick and Morris radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Hold on. I can check this off the list of things I wanted to talk about. You can actually see here it says Dawn's Lady Issues. Right there. X. That's done.
Here, wait.
Fridge.
Put that over here. I'm going to share that with the
Oh,
the
would
people.
You like to? It's at the bottom. I've X'd it out. It's the very bottom thing there. All right. Yeah, that was one of many things that I wanted to bring up today.
Okay.
All right. You're going to post it on the Intertron?
Oh, yeah, so people,
all right. Awesome. Hey, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. Later on, well, I have this thing about CAPTCHA, that I want to ask you, largely because I'm hoping that somebody else will have the answer. But by asking you, maybe somebody else will volunteer the correct information. And then I never talked about why I was scanning the obituary.
Oh, yeah.
But we should probably... we'll do that when Jim gets in here.
Yes.
So, well, let's just take a break here in a second. We'll come back. We got news coming up. Hick Watch, Taser Watch. Oh, remind me to read this insane email that I got from Siegfried.
Okay.
Let me write this down. Siegfried. And so forth. Humor Beat Comedy 101. That's coming up. Also, clue number 5 in the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. So that is all on the way. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. This is all true. So stay there. We'll be back after this. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Some days I feel like my shadow's casting me. Some days the sun don't shine. Sometimes I wonder what tomorrow's gonna bring when I think about my dirty life and times. One day I came to a fork in the road. Folks, I just couldn't go where I was told. Now they'll hunt me down and hang me for my crimes if I tell about my dirty life and times. Someone tells you went out for a stroll. Should've run after her. It's hard to find a girl with a heart of gold when you're living in a four-letter world. But if she won't love me, then her sister will. She's from Say One Thing and Need Another's Will. She can't seem to make up her mind when she hears about my dirty life and times.
Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here I hit that post right there, Don.
Delivering
the post is what I do.
That was nice. Right after you were wiping off your keyboard with a paper towel.
That's how good I am, Don. Multitasking.
What did you spill over there?
Postmaster General. What?
What did you spill over there?
A little water. No, but here's the thing. But at the urging of both Seamus and Sarah Dillon, I just put this thing on my MacBook that actually protects the keyboard from liquids. Because, you know, Sarah did the whole thing of ruining her laptop by spilling some whiskey into the keyboard. Now, I'm not likely to do that. But every time I have, and it's not often, but every time I've spilled liquid anywhere in the vicinity, like within, like, 10, you know, square feet of my keyboard, I just immediately have that fear of like, oh my God, what would have happened if it had been closer? Because then you just have to kill yourself. Yeah. So I got this thing over the keyboard now. So it's almost like I want to spill things on it now just to sort of test it.
Well, someday when I get myself a bright and shiny new Mac, which will happen sometime, I will get something so I don't spill things into it.
It is, and Seamus was like, and after Sarah did that, where she spilled the whiskey into the keyboard, which apparently is bad not because of the alcohol, but because there's sugars in it, and then everything just sort of sticks and whatever.
Because the whole invisible shield thing on my iPhone, If nothing else, it has pointed out to me just how badly I beat up.
How badly you treat your things.
The things that I own, because this thing is just so dinged and battered.
That's the thing.
Beaten.
Like, imagine what that phone would look like, the screen would look like, if you didn't have that invisible shield.
I know, and I've had it like 3 months.
Yeah,
and
no, I'm almost certain that it was with my iPhone 4. By the way, they've pushed back the release date of the iPhone 5, which is good because it means it's a little bit longer for me to be at the front of the line.
And meanwhile, I think I read someplace AT&T has like dropped the price of the 3GS to like $50.
Well, but that's because it's going to be de facto. I won't say it's going to be useless, but it's like one step closer to the incinerator once the iPhone 5 comes out.
Yeah, but if you want to step in, I mean, because it's like I got in on that. I have the 3GS and it cost me $99, and it's got OS 4 on it. So I, you know, with some notable exceptions, I can, you know, I can run everything that they can run on the 4, just slower.
What you need to do is, as soon as the iPhone 5 gets ready to come out, you find somebody who has an iPhone 4, longs for Apple stuff or lusts for it, as they often do, but is cash poor, and then offer to buy their iPhone 4 from them. I think it must have been the iPhone 4 where it's like, I had it for, and you saw me carrying it around in the box. I wouldn't even take it out of the box until I went and got the invisible shield put on it, because I was just like, because if anything happens to this, it would be like, you know, be like cutting the limbs off my child.
Well, I think I went straight to the invisible shield place.
By the way, who I ought to bill for these segments.
From AT&T after I picked up my phone.
Yeah. So. No, seriously, one of these days I'm just going to present them with an invoice for all of the plug, because I can't even tell you the number of people who've said, like, I heard you talking about the invisible, it's the rock source. I heard you been talking about it and I bought it. So, I mean, it really is, and I'm just saying, if you have a piece of electronic equipment, it really is a fine product to put on there. What was my point? But I almost am tempted to spill something on my laptop now because I've got this invisible, this sort of clear guard thing on the keyboard. Not unlike, of all people, so I heard Glenn Beck being interviewed. It was actually by the Freakonomics guys. The Freakonomics guys were talking to Glenn Beck, of all people. I think they were just interviewing just whoever they could find in New York at that moment who was sort of notable. But they were talking about safety features in automobiles and whether safety features, in fact, have the opposite effect to some degree because they encourage people to drive more recklessly. And Beck talked about this Mercedes that he drives. And the Mercedes, of course, you know, because he's like uber rich. And so it's one of those things where it's like it does things that I never even knew that cars did these things until I heard him talking. But, well, it comes standard now. What apparently comes standard on the class of Mercedes that Beck drives is that it senses if the car is about to roll. And A, it automatically rolls up all the windows in time for them to be closed by the moment you hit the ground. So they go like, poosh, and they shoot up. They shoot closed.
Wow.
Pausing if there's anything in them, like your hand. But if there's no blockages, it shoots the windows closed if it senses you're about to roll. Also, it detects the direction in which the car is rolling, and it adjusts the seat accordingly and, in fact, moves the airbags to the appropriate place behind the dash so that they come out at just the right place.
Wow.
And Beck actually said, he goes, it makes me want to roll the car. It was like, I want to take corners at 190 in this thing. Apparently the guy who sold him the Mercedes actually used the phrase, it's death proof. And he's like, you have no idea how badly I want to just drive this thing off a cliff just to make it. It was actually, so if you come across that one, it's a good interview.
I do believe that too, because there was an episode of Bones like a week or so back and had one of the most awkward product placements in it I've ever seen, that apparently the main character of Bones drives a Prius. And they have this really awkward, unfortunate discussion in the car where David Boreanaz says something to her about her driving, and she's this beeping sound that keeps happening, and she looks at him and says, "Well, the Prius has a sensor that beeps when you are following too close to the car in front of you," and then and they tried really hard to work this kind of seamlessly into their banter, but it was obviously just a big fat product placement. But at the same time, I thought to myself, I would never stop driving too close to things just to listen to see if it still works.
It's just, well, you know, and it's, some of that stuff gets really, like Susan Reynolds, who's the marketing director at CBS Radio and now works at Kink. She has, they're a family of means. And because, her husband, she has a great job and her husband's like some power broker somewhere and whatever. But in their BMW, it doesn't have the thing of the rearview mirrors. It just has the little cameras everywhere. So you're just looking.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I had to move her car at one point, and it's like you get in there, and it's like you turn on the keys, and the whole front screen just goes and like comes to life, and just these monitors come up that show you – the outside of the car as seen from like every angle.
So here's a question for you, because I've pondered this myself. If you had one of those cars that has the thing that it will parallel park the car for you. I don't know if you've seen that. Does that feature exist? I think it's a feature on the Lexus, and there may be like another couple of cars that do it, that you pull up next to, you know, the car in front of the space,
right,
and then you push this button, and with the cameras and the sensors and the stuff, it will parallel park the car for you.
Right.
And here's my question. Would you use it?
Yes.
Would you trust it,
yes,
to not bump into anything?
Well, I would
be terrified that it wouldn't work.
I don't know that I would trust it, but I trust it more than I trust my own parallel parking ability. And I know that I have to like turn in my man card or whatever, but I suck at parallel parking. I'm at the world's worst parallel parking.
It just seems like one of those things that just shouldn't work, and your car should not be able to do that.
See, but that's a thing where it seems like, to me, that actually is less mystifying. Like, I'm not saying I could build the system to do that. But that seems pretty straightforward. It's just an object sensor. It just senses proximity, mm-hmm, which I don't. That is a thing that I actually would trust, because it seems like that's pretty straightforward for an engineer to build. For me, though, like, I'll tell you this, that I was able to parallel park flawlessly once, and it was when I got my license at the age of 16. And since then, I will drive like a mile out of my way and walk, you know, an extra three blocks to get to wherever, just so I don't have to parallel park.
I hate
parallel parking.
I'm an excellent parallel parker, and my driving instructor actually told me I didn't learn to drive until I was 18. I didn't take the class in high school. And in California, it's like you have to take the class in high school. You have to take a class to get your underage learner's permit thingy. And so I didn't. So I didn't learn to drive until I was 18. And my mom insisted I go to an actual driving instructor to learn to drive. And he was very impressed that I figured out parallel parking right first time, right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Very good at it. He also said I was very good at merging.
See, and it's like, it's not like I can't do it. It's just that, like, I mean, I can parallel park, but it takes me four times longer than most people.
Right. My caveat being, of course, that like that one day of the month, like today, I just forget how.
Then
I get frustrated because it's not working right the first time. And then I just get angry and I'm pounding my fist. I'm going, oh, come on. And screaming at myself.
Here's what's weird. I parallel parked flawlessly today. So maybe when it leaves your head for the day, it visits me for the day. It's like some sort of a parking fairy that flits from person to person.
I believe Mr. Willig would like to say something about parking.
Big Jim Willig. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
You know, have I mentioned this? You don't have an intro theme.
I don't. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but I want you to have one.
He's the thing. Big Jim Willig. He is wacky. He's lovely and sweet, and he smells like taffy.
Please don't do that. It's a thing that...
You know how much I had to pay for that intro? You have any vague clue?
Too much.
Jingles are not cheap.
It's a thing that I love bringing people along with. And all I've got is just, you know, without the... You don't want that.
Fail.
Yeah. So at some point you got to think about what song you want me to use for your introductory music.
Or maybe I could I'll whip something up on my own and
please
send it to you for your perusal.
Because otherwise it's just going to be Blackula Attacks again. And
why not?
Sure.
While you guys were talking about a driving instructor, I took behind the wheel instruction at my high school because it lowered your automobile insurance and it actually counted as like a class credit. The guy that taught it to my high school class was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Taglieri. And what was interesting about Mr. Taglieri was, A, Vietnam vet, so obviously really good under pressure and prone to just snapping at any given moment. Also had one eye.
Really?
Yeah. Which, again, Catholic education, you're getting taught sex ed from priests and nuns, and then to turn around and have behind-the-wheel training by a one-eyed Vietnam vet.
That's fantastic.
So the pressure to exceed and perform, it cannot be put into words. You're basically like outside of your body, kind of putting your soul in the universe's hands. What happens, happens. And, you know, should it turn out well, that's great. He liked me for some mysterious reason. Like, I don't know what it was. Whenever we would go out, he would have a couple of the other drivers drive for a while, just berating them the entire time. And then once we got to the farthest point, we'd stop. Everybody would get out and have a quick stretch, and then he'd have me drive back. And he was very, very meticulous about, like, hands at 10 and 2. For me, one hand's, like, dangling on the car windowsill. The other hand's on the wheel. We're chatting, you know, politely. It's weird.
Why was that?
I don't know. I think maybe because he still had that militaristic kind of prowess, I was the guy that, like, you know, I'm the funny guy of the unit. So he kind of looked out for me, you know. But even though he knew the day was going to come where I was going to catch a bullet.
Right.
So, like, up until that point, I was, like, relieving of the stress of dealing with these kids.
You You were the guy that was comic relief for the first two thirds of the film, and then an object lesson in the cruel randomness of war at the end.
Absolutely,
Sarge. Why do they get the good ones?
Did he ever call you like dog face or anything like that?
No, but he wasn't a football coach, but he did that thing where he referred to you by your last name.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Willick.
Willick.
Yeah.
All right, Willick, you're driving us back.
This is a perfect opportunity to talk about this is a – now, see, now it's playing at the wrong time. Hold on. Down, Blackula, down. This is a perfect opportunity to talk about why I was perusing the obituaries the other day. So it'll all make sense here in a second.
Okay.
I was talking about the fact that – this started a few weeks ago. This started a few weeks ago when the younger sister of a good friend of Laura and I's passed away. We'd heard that she had passed on, and the friend we actually communicate with, you know, basically online or on the phone at this point because she lives in another state. But the younger sister, I had not seen since we moved away from California, and our good friends, they lived down the street from us, and you know, and the younger sister was she was a fetching young lass, mm-hmm. and I hadn't seen her since that time, which was, I guess, now 13 years ago or something. And I think she was like 19 then. Anyway, so Lars like, you know, hey, so-and-so passed away. He's talking about this younger sister. And I said, really? And then immediately I was thinking like, I should Google some pictures of her and see if that obituary photo's up. I wonder if she aged well. It was just sort of, which I don't mean to sound cruel. It was just one of those things where it's like, it's the thing that you would do with another person, like if you heard that like they had gotten a prestigious job or if they were going to be the speaker at your reunion.
If that job were death, you'd be exactly right on.
No, but what I'm saying is that it just happened to be that she was dead. It was, I just hadn't really thought of her. For like 10 or 12 years. And so normally somebody would say, hey, did you hear about so-and-so? Had quadruplets. And you go, I haven't thought of that guy for 10 years, quadruplets. I wonder what he looks like these days. For me, it wasn't that she had quadruplets. It was, you know, dead. But the end result was the same. I was like, I haven't seen her since the late 90s. I wonder if she's still a gorgeous young lady. And then I was thwarted because it's like it was because then her obituary, and I think I mentioned this, was on one of those like pay sites where it's like obits.com or something where it's free for like a day. So you would think, unless you're me, so the family can grieve or whatever. But then it's like, if you want to go look at it, like, have you seen our daughter's obituary? It's great. And then it's like, you know, it costs like $10 a month or something.
Unless you're the grim specter of death just hovering over it, waiting for a name to pop up that you recognize.
It was so weird. And so so I mentioned this to Dawn the other day. I forget exactly how the conversation went, but I was noting that what all the newspapers are now doing is the newspapers, when the death announcement, which I guess is what we call obituaries these days, when the death announcement runs, it's on, like, if the Oregonian runs a death announcement, it's there in their archives for like a week. But then after a week, it goes behind this paywall at this site called legacy.org or .com or something, which has nothing to do with the hospital. Legacy.com is this company that archives, they have some deal, they archive all the obituaries from most newspapers that have online content. So it's like, you know, the New York Times, so-and-so dies, you can see that obituary in the paper and then online for a week, after which, if you want to read the obituary for somebody, like if you hear that a friend of yours died, you know, and you go, I haven't seen that guy for a few months. He died. What was that about? You go online to look at his obituary. It takes you to this website where you then got to pay like $10 a month to view the obituaries. It's now, a total racket.
I'm intrigued. Now, can I move over my friends list from Facebook to this list so that if anybody on that my friends list drops dead,
you get an alert?
Yeah, I get like a ringtone or something kind of pops up my way to kind of alert me?
Actually, yes.
Are you serious?
There is a Facebook app. There's actually two of them. There's a Facebook app. There's one that had engendered some controversy among internet users a couple weeks ago. There's a Facebook app that will alert you if certain people on your watch list become single. There's another one, though, that will tell you if a Facebook account has been totally disabled and deactivated, because usually that's what happens when somebody dies, is that the family emails and they go, hey, our kid just died. Can you turn off the Facebook? Whatever. And you get an alert about that, because apparently that's a great tell for whether a Facebook user has passed on. Anyway, so I was mentioning this to Dawn. I said that it's kind of a weird racket they've got going on where when you go to look up somebody's obituary online, all you can really see, it's like a Google result. You'll see the first sentence or two. So-and-so died at the age of, you know, 42 last week, is survived you know, cause of death is, and then you don't, and then you have to click on it to see the rest. And then this thing comes up saying, for the low cost of just $10, you can read the rest of this obituary. And the newspapers must get like a cut of that. I mean, wouldn't you imagine? That's a thing that, like, because newspapers are trying to, they're looking under sofa cushions for change now. They must be getting a kickback.
Or they just take a flat fee to license it or something.
So here's why I was looking. Because Don said, well, why are you looking up obituaries online? And I said, I was looking to see which of the many enemies that I've acquired during my life have shuffled off their mortal coil, who I have outlasted in the game, in the tournament that we call life. Here's what that was prompted by. So, you know what? Somebody has now started a Facebook page that just tracks the deaths of people and teachers from my high school. That's all they do. They just track the scene.
Really?
Now, you didn't think this was going to be interesting, and your eyes just went to the size of saucers just now. There is a Facebook page that just is constantly updated with the list of people by year and by category, meaning whether they're faculty or students, and then by year, who is dead, and then I swear to God, what the cause of death was.
Have you liked this page?
I got to tell you, like, hours of – it seems wrong to say hours of fun, but I swear to God, just looking up, you know, and just going through going, didn't know him, hated that guy, excellent. Oh, didn't care for him either. Well done, God, you know. Okay, and so here, though, is the note that I made. And I meant to talk to Don about this, and then as we got behind with some stuff, and then I decided that you were the perfect guy to be in the room while we were discussing this, because you would obviously have many thoughts about this. I swear to Christ, you know what the – because the first thing you see when you go there – are you Googling to see if there's a page like that for your high school?
Yes.
You have to wait, though, because you have to weigh in on this observation.
Okay.
When I go there, the first thing you see is a list of all of the teachers from your school who have died. And then it lists the date that they died and then, you know, the cause of death. And then below that, it starts ranking all of the dead students by year of, you know, class of 72, class of 73. And then the year that they died, cause of death. I swear to God, the very first teacher's name I recognized as being dead – it listed hunting accident.
Really?
No one really dies of hunting accidents. It's always a euphemism. That's like cleaning your handgun. Hunting accidents, that's a thing that they say to cover up something else almost always. So and
in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey.
So then I immediately go to the obituary section of my hometown paper, thinking, well, I'm going to find out what this hunting accident's all about. So I put in his name. That's when I discover they say so and so is you know died at the age of 62. The cause was, and then it just says click for more, and you got to pay. So you see, just now you all were just thinking to yourself, who would possibly want to pay $10 a month to read obituary notices? Once you find a list of everybody from your high school that is dead and what they died of, your ass wants to read all about that. The obituary becomes much more interesting to you.
Tragically run down by steamroller on fire, driven by a crazed.
Okay.
For more.
Here's the thing. One of the guys in my class, one of the guys in my high school class, dead. And then the cause of death is listed as died while performing act of valor. What is that? I mean, I know what it means, but what specifically are they referring to? It's fascinating.
Himself at a xenomorph so that his friends could jettison to safety.
Could be anything, right? And so now it's a whole thing of like, am I really going to support this horrible scam of charging $10 a month to read death notices?
I think you've already answered this question. The sound of the enthusiasm in your voice has answered that question for all.
Oh, and let me just tell you this. First of all, I don't know whether it's just that I've been living clean, low these many years, but it did seem like God paid special attention to many of the requests that I made of him over the, the 20 years since I left high school. Some of my, you think God's not listening. You think that your entreaties are falling on deaf ears.
He's planning.
You know, that's really, it was just, as Garth Brooks said, you know, sometimes you thank God for unanswered prayers because God's waiting for the right moment to give you a certain gift or to answer a specific request. Clearly, he's waiting till a guy is changing a tire by the side of the road, and that's when he decides to fulfill wish number 75 on Rick Emerson's request list. So, anyway.
We're counting down the top 10 people that Rick Emerson wants dead.
Oh, it's really just satisfying beyond words.
I will tell you something, though. I don't seem to have one of those pages for my high school for deaths, but boy, that is one classy looking reunion page to get people
together.
The
logo is Comic Sans.
The logo is Comic Sans.
Excellent. All right. I'm just saying. So you all ought to check your high school because somebody may have – this may be a thing that is – you know, that every high school does. What, you know, what really surprised me, though, was that they listed the cause of death. I mean, that seemed like a thing that – I mean, I guess maybe there's – if you're just some – you know, I don't know who runs the site. It's just some guy.
Yeah.
But it seems like if you're just some dude running the Facebook page, probably it's not like a newspaper. You've worked in newspapers, Don. They're like an editor who decides whether the cause of death is listed or not. Who makes that decision?
Pretty much there's generally a policy of whether or not you're going to list causes of death and then at all. And I think and that depends on the newspaper. Some newspapers don't list it at all.
Is it for certain things they simply won't, like suicide, they just won't list it at all?
So I guess so. Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. I think you take basic taste considerations.
I know for a while there were papers they would not list AIDS as the cause because it was such a stigma attached to it. I don't know if that's still the case or not.
Yeah. It's such a ridiculous thing because I've worked at newspapers where, like when I worked at the newspaper in St. Helens, I was responsible for all the obituary stuff, and I would often have to actually write them because people would just give you the information, and then I would have to like take all of the info that they had given me, and I would have to write the thing. And every once in a while, people would just be pissed off about something because the thing is, you know, you work really, really hard to like make sure that, like, say you didn't spell someone's name wrong.
Right.
But the thing is that, you know, come on, I work at a crappy newspaper in Columbia County and I'm underpaid and I'm working 12-hour days and I hate my life. So, you know, sorry. But you try to do it. But the thing that bugs me is that some newspapers, your bigger newspapers, actually charge now for obituaries. And I don't think – and I felt like particularly with your smaller newspapers, your community newspapers, you shouldn't charge people to put obituary notices in. A lot of newspapers now charge for birth notices, and I can see that because there's just so damn many of them. But for obituaries, that is in its way kind of a public service that you're doing for locals.
But see, I was thinking about that. Like really, what is the purpose of obituaries? And I'm not asking in real life. Like if I were to ask a newspaper – what is the purpose of these obituaries? What would they say is the reason? Other than gawkerism, which is the real reason?
That is the
what would a newspaper say is the real reason?
I believe the reason is just to alert people in the community who might not have known that someone died, that they did. The thing is, I think that there was a time when you were more likely to find out someone you knew died from reading it in the newspaper, than it is now. I think we're in far more communication.
That's true. We're interconnected in many ways.
We're interconnected in many ways, and also people tend to be families are a lot more spread out. So if somebody in your family dies or somebody that you knew, either somebody's going to call you and tell you about it or not. You know, but if you're living in Chicago, you're not going to know that, you know.
No, that makes sense. I could see that.
But if you're living in town and everyone you knew lived in this town and you went to school in this town, you worked in this town, you know, and you died, this gives like basically people that you knew a few years ago, people you used to work with, et cetera, an opportunity to see that you passed on and come to the memorial service if the public is welcome to the memorial service.
I do remember, actually, that my every morning, the highlight of my grandmother's morning was reading the obituaries. And I think that that's like not just an old person thing and not just a Rick Emerson thing. I think that's an old lady thing, too, because old ladies love death. They just can't get enough of it. That's
They bring life, and, you know, it's like kind of like the closing to that circuit.
Well, it's just it's the same reason why, like, 98% of your murder mysteries sell to women, and why Miss Marple and Agatha Christie books sell to women, and why made-for-television movies about homicide or things such as Diagnosis Murder, the audience is like 75% female, and it's not just 75% female, it's old women and younger women who already behave as though they are 75 years old. Old women and homicide and death just go together like sunshine and moon glow. So, yeah, the highlight of my grandmother's day was just like lighting her first Marlboro light, cracking open the newspaper, and then just trying to see which of her contemporaries she had outlived. And so, as much as you like to think that when you're growing up, you're not going to be anything like your relatives, that, you know, you're going to be different than your parents, you're going to be different than the people who preceded you in your family line, that really is an indication that I'm just not far from the stump of that particular tree. That I lost 90 minutes of my life scrolling through the obituary and then going to Google and immediately just trying to see like photo, damn, no photo, and just trying to, you know, glean whatever information I could. Oh, by the way, here's another thing that surprised me about that. An astonishing number of them listed as, so-and-so, dead, year, and then cause, self-inflicted, which is strange. Because that makes you wonder, well, how did the guy who, you know, runs the page, like, how does he know that? So that must be information that is contributed by somebody who is in the know, or maybe that is a thing that they put in obituaries now because they didn't used to. So I wondered how it is that they came by that kind of information. But it was, you know, and it was just very bizarre. But that is, to answer your question from a few days back, that's why I was looking up the legacy.com site where they charge for obituaries, because, you know. And I also have to say, my one final thought on this is, I don't know proportionally if it's like higher than average, but there seemed to be a lot of people from my class that were dead. Now, I know it's like, as my doctor said, I'm not getting any younger, but I'm 37 or whatever, so it's not like I'm 70. I mean, I'm not like heading toward the actuarial point of just people keeling over for no reason. There did seem to be a lot of dead folks in my class.
Well, you do. First of all, you did go to a high school in a town with a nuclear reactor.
Well, there's that.
And secondly, how many of those deaths were self-inflicted? Again, Kennewick.
Yeah, I guess. Well, and that is really the other thing, is that I suppose depending on where you're living, either the environment makes that decision for you, or you just don't really treat your body like the temple of Jesus that it is. So,
well, I do treat my body like the temple of Jesus. There's just a lot of Carl's Juniors there. Who knew?
It's the yes. I have nothing. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Well, in just a moment, we'll do our weekly installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and legacy of Ms. Lucille Ball. We should do some of this, though. What is it called? News. Here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
I was just sitting here looking at this page and reading the lyrics to my high school's alma mater, which I never knew. So.
Really? I still remember mine.
Yeah?
You want to?
Yes, please.
O Catholic High, we hail thy name, loved guardian of our youth. O radiant, the holy flame that lights the lamp of truth.
This is your high school?
I pledge you our firm loyalty, O alma mater dear. I will cherish, love, and honor thee till and thy great name revere.
Hmm. And so what is it? Did you say, what is that called, Don?
The alma mater.
Is that a song? Mm-hmm. In other words, is alma mater? I thought alma mater was a. I thought it was like alumnus. I thought that was a term to use to describe people.
Alma mater's a term you use to describe your school. You say that was my alma mater, but alma mater is also what you call the school song, the hail to the song that every school has.
Interesting.
Which, like in mine, it's a hail to the aviation, because I went to aviation high school. Aviation, hail to thee. You're building a nation strong and free. You enfold young people whose souls unfurl to become men and women fit to conquer the world.
Whoa.
I wonder.
It's kind of dark
apparently
twist there,
apparently, I went to high school in Nazi Germany.
Nietzsche high. I wonder who writes that. I mean, it's like, is that a thing where they just like, Bob, doesn't your wife write some of that poetry for the cross stitch?
Sure, you know, does.
Great. Okay, here's. You know, want to knock something out real quick? Because, I mean, that we all probably went to high school at a time. I mean, the high school that we went to were created and came into being, you know, before there was an industry built around every aspect of childhood. So they probably didn't have like a firm they went to write the alma mater. There's some guy who had to write that. So it makes you wonder who got that assignment. That's the sort of thing that is fascinating to me. That's the kind of thing that I would actually do. I'd actually watch like a 10-minute documentary on tracking down the guy who wrote somebody's high school, alma mater, and just going like, you know what? And just to see, like, you know, how much thought he put into it, or if it was like secretly something that he stole from somebody else.
And sometimes he's got to do something where he knows the school is nothing really but like a turd factory.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's got to put a positive spin on it. It's like, how do I do this?
What can I say about Chico High?
And there's that just hasn't already been said.
And there's just nothing. And so you're just trying to, you know, gild that lily in every way possible. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our Hick Watch.
That seemed appropriate. Here's your Hick Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Oh. Here's Don Taylor with your Hick Watch.
Dateline, Boone County, Kentucky.
Oh, dude, the whites!
Two families headed to court on Thursday in a dispute over a miniature donkey. Colleen Bray and David Youngcow.
Colleen Bray? Really?
Yes, Colleen Bray.
That's awesome.
And David Youngcow gave the donkey.
Youngcow?
Yunkau.
Yunkau.
I don't know. Yeah. Yunkau. Gave the donkey to her two young sons as a gift 2 years ago. She said there were no strings attached to the gift. Bray said the female donkey, named Apache, was kept at Yunkau's barn until he needed to lease the space to someone else. Shortly after Bray moved Apache to the Little Britain stable in December, Bray said that Yunkau told her he wanted the donkey back. Bray said she doesn't know why. It was a gift for my kids, and they're attached to her, Bray said. Yunkau said that he never gave the donkey to Bray or her children and only allowed her to borrow the donkey so that her kids could use the animal in shows.
What possible use would he have for the donkey?
Well, he said in shows, so maybe it was like some 4-H thing or something. He said he never gave Bray permission to move the donkey to another stable.
I mean, I don't think they have... I was going to say, I don't think they have donkey shows, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
they might have donkey shows, and get, but it's a miniature donkey, so maybe it's a midget.
It's a shorter show.
A midget donkey show.
I don't think there's like a sort of donkey equivalent to the Westminster Kennel Club thing. I can't imagine that he's going to be
best
making
in show.
Yeah, he's going to be bringing home a lot of money by showing the donkey at a fair or something.
By the way, I totally just found out. I just realized our niche, unfulfilled fetish area. Midget donkey shows. Midget ladies and miniature donkeys.
It seems like the work and money required to recruit the people for that is probably going to wipe out any profits we might make.
Okay, probably.
I'm just saying.
You are woefully underestimating the draw that this would bring.
But I still feel that has got to be an area that is underserved.
You know, can I just...
Can
I tell you on that... I've talked about that compilation porn I have where the clown shows up halfway through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Getting whatever in the bathtub. You know, there's like a bunch of midgets scattered throughout that thing as well. Like about every ninth or tenth scene, it's a midget. And that's just... You're not prepared for that.
You know, the midget porn DVD that I was anonymously gifted at Christmas time is still in the shrink wrap. And not all entirely because of my fear of clowns, but because... I realized at some point that I got the free giant TV from Mike Russell, and my DVD player is hooked up to the giant TV. So if I wanted to watch the cloud board, it would be on a 55-inch television, and that would be, like, way too scary.
Here's – it's funny you talk about clown porn. I swear to God, we are still within the sort of thing here. But it's weird that you bring that up. Where is my – let's see. Where's the email about this? So I said this to myself. So a guy sends me – this photograph on the 24th, so it would have been, yesterday morning. He said, it says, Rick, this should terrify Dawn, is the subject line. And he sends me, and it's a Google link. It's a link to a picture just a JPEG. And what's really, really sad, and disturbing is that he sent me this link to a clown image that he then wanted me to use to terrify you. What's sad is that I immediately recognized the image as being from the clown porn DVD that you received last year. So I have become so familiar with clown porn that out of a single frame...
Oh, it's that guy.
One
again.
Frame, a screen capture of one frame from that. I was able to go, I totally know what that is.
Boxcar Giggles, I know him.
Well, now, to be fair, that one clown porn DVD that we all watched together, there was only one actual clown.
What
in that whole video.
I thought we were cool, man. I'm listening out on all this clown porn, like viewing parties.
I think this was before you started coming in. Someone sent some clown porn.
Well, we
used clown
stuff.
Porn, if by the way.
Well, here's the thing. If you really feel like you need to catch up, Dawn has actually been given the same clown porn movie at least twice now.
No,
so she's
it's
got
a different
spare.
One. The second one is a completely different clown porn
really?
Movie. I think it has some of the same sequences on it, but it is a different compilation of clown porn.
Okay. Well, there's certain elements that one has to stay true to, otherwise you lose the whole continuity of a clown adult entertainment.
Yes, I imagine that's true. Okay.
So those people are fighting donkey. Over the donkey.
Yeah,
and
there's your Heck Watch.
Makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
Okay. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. A little bit later here, we'll have your weekly installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101 with Mr. Big Jim Willig. Mm-hmm. This week, talking about the life and work of Lucille Ball. Also, we got clue number 5 in the E.H. Vending Name That Snack Contest. The E.H. Vending Name That Snack Contest. We'll resume the news here in just one moment. We should take this opportunity to talk about our good friends at Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com. That's our website, squireselectric.com. Or you can call them at 503-252-1600. 1609. See, I've done that thing again of like I forgot all about the issue with my refrigerator. And now just talking about, I feel like I've started to make this negative mental association between Squires and Lighter, which is unfair to them and unfortunate.
Look at it. The guy's there today. You will probably go home and there will be a brand spanking new working refrigerator.
See, that was the thing is like I almost wanted to suggest to him last time, like if you give us a brand new fridge, then if we're not living here, something you can charge more rent to whoever. Because here's the thing. Let me ask you this, Don. Did I tell you the thing about how when I reported to him that the replacement fridge was also not working? That he actually said something like, maybe I ought to just buy something new instead of these used pieces of crap.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that might also be an avenue of approach. Because it seems to me that just the inconvenience and annoyance caused now by having not just replace one fridge, having to replace two refrigerators, consuming one of my whole Saturdays a few weekends ago when he brought the new one in, and now I have actually lost like a complete load of food from inside. I mean, that's like a fridge full of food that is basically is gone that I had to put in the trash this morning. It seems like I got a little leverage to lean on him for a temporary rent reduction, wouldn't you think?
Quite possibly.
Do you think
yeah.
he should be comping me at least part of next month's rent?
He should buy you some groceries.
He
should give you a $30 or $40 like Fred Meyer gift card so you can go buy some groceries.
That's my thing. But I can't think of how I would bring that up. It doesn't seem like there's any sort of tactful way to or subtle way to say like,
I believe you owe me food, sir.
You did cost me all of my foodstuffs, which were contained within this defective refrigerator that you gave me. So, and now, by the way, people across the street, this is going to be the second time inside of a month that they're going to see an old-ass broken refrigerator just sitting on the front lawn of my home.
Is it supposedly your job to get rid of the broken refrigerators?
No, I mean, he has a guy who comes by, but clearly, the way to sell my landlord a fridge or to be the guy who removes refrigerators from his tenant's lawn is to be the low bidder. So that guy's probably not going to come by until like tomorrow, so there's going to be a refrigerator sitting in front of my house for the better part of an afternoon and a morning. Not to mention the fact that if you get anywhere near my driveway, unless it just plunges below 32 degrees and stays there like forever, which might actually happen, if you get within a block of my house, it's just going to smell like chicken fat. So, I mean,
it's interesting, though. It's supposed to get down to something like 16 degrees tonight. So you could, technically, if you wanted to, keep food in your new refrigerator inside the house and in the refrigerator that will be sitting out on your lawn.
I suppose. I'm just saying. It's not really like I'm a page at a Better Homes and Gardens at this point. So I don't know what I was talking about here. Squires Electric. After when all is said and done, I mean, God help me if he puts in like a third refrigerator and that one goes on the fritz, because that means that it will almost certainly be the outlet of the electricity. And then that will suck, A, because I'll be without a fridge yet, and also because then that means they're going to have to come in and just do whatever it is they do, just tear apart the wall and just fix. Although, here's the thing. If it does turn out the outlet, that is the outlet, I will totally steer him toward Squires Electric. Because then everybody will owe me, Rick Emerson, a favor.
You end up having to go without a refrigerator for some time, again, our fine friends at EH Vending have refrigerators. They brought the one that's sitting in our corner with the beer in it.
See, I hadn't thought about that. Because they only do the industrial size refrigerators.
But they might loan you one until the landlord fixes this whole fridge problem.
What a fool I've been. That should have been my first call. Cross-pollinating our live reach here, but that should have been my first call. Actually, was to EH Vending. I am hoist by my own petard.
Because they had offered when we first moved in here, they offered Greg and Sarah a beer fridge, and they said sure. And then they brought in that massive one that was in the corner that was taking up all the space,
like the size of a house,
and that weighed like 70 billion pounds.
That's true.
And then they took it away, and they brought in this nice little one that is sitting there in the corner and keeping everything icy cold.
Well, look, I mean, so if this next refrigerator should go belly up, then that is definitely what I'll do. Well, in the meantime, if you have any sort of an issue with the wiring, or you do have an outlet in your house that goes back, well, Sarah has revealed at this point, actually, that in her new apartment, she can only plug one thing at a time into the outlets on one of her walls, or everything just goes and goes off. That's if she yeah. Doesn't even matter what it is. It could be, it could just be her Tamagotchi charger. She just plug.
That's funny because Tamagotchi, they don't require.
I know, but I just couldn't really think of anything else. That was the only other thing that was a low energy draw that I could come up with was that sort of magic ball thing you had in high school that like vibrated to Pink Floyd music, but I don't know what it's called. Anyone?
Awesome.
Yeah, her Tesla ball or whatever they're called.
Yes, her Tesla ball. Anyway, but it's like she's in this apartment now where if she plugs more than one thing into the outlet in one wall, everything in the apartment goes dark. So, you're like, you don't want to live in a situation like that. That's no way to... You're an American. You deserve better than that. So you call Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. Or go to squireselectric.com. Free estimates. No job too small, no job too large. They've done everything from a single light socket to a full condominium. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. Please tell me you heard it here, won't you? That's Squires Electric.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, speaking of things that are frozen and need to be refrigerated, human breast milk flavored ice cream has gone on sale at a restaurant in London.
Finally!
The concoction that is called the Baby Gaga is available at Ice Creamist's restaurant in Covent Garden.
Even the name is off-putting.
Breast milk from donors is blended with Madagascan vanilla pods and lemon zest and then freshly churned into ice cream.
Okay, there's nothing about this ice cream that sounds appealing even before you factor in the breast milk. Why would you want an ice cream with lemon zest in it?
I've had ice cream with a little bit of lemon in it.
Because the lemon zest is code for lemon rind, right?
Yeah, it's the
essence.
It's the yellow part, not the white part. You know,
okay.
The white
part. But isn't it bitter tasting?
No, only the white part is bitter tasting.
Oh, is that true? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But yes, the founder of Ice Creamists, Matt O'Connor, said, "The Baby Gaga tastes creamy and rich. No one's done anything interesting with ice cream in the last 100 years. Well, it's a lie. People do all kinds of interesting things with ice cream. Anyway, we've come up with a method of infusing ice cream with breast milk.
It's not infused. That's another misuse of that word.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Just putting something in something else isn't infusing.
No. No, you could infuse the milk with the vanilla pods and the lemon zest, but you're not infusing ice cream with breast milk.
That's like saying the mothers themselves have been infused with a baby.
Anyway, it says we want to change the way people think about ice cream. If it's good enough for our children, it's good enough for the rest of us. Some people will hear about it and go, yuck, but actually it's pure, organic, free range, and totally natural.
Here's the thing. So wouldn't you agree, though, that this is a guy who is just figuring that he's like our fetish. He's like our fetish thing. He's just figuring he'll get 100% of whatever that market is, the breast milk fetish market.
And it's one of these things that this has gone out over the wires and it's gotten news. And now people know that his restaurant exists in London. That's really it, because he actually he put an ad in the paper. He got these women, these nursing mothers, to come in and donate breast milk, made this ice cream. And it's like they were paid £15 for every 10 ounces of milk that was extracted. It's like a scoop of the stuff. He's charging like $36 for it or something. It's, you know, it's a publicity campaign.
Yeah, but see,
something that you could obviously make at home, too.
But also, it seems like the idea of it being a publicity gambit, if that is true, it seems ill-advised because I know I can count on zero fingers the number of people who will be more inclined to eat at that restaurant now. I can count a lot of fingers, and people are going to go, "Ooh, no!"
I don't know.
That's the worst publicity gimmick ever, if that's what it is, because there's no one who is going to be more inclined to eat there now.
Well, there are.
I disagree.
There are always people who think the best way to market their food products is to do something weird, and it's often a bad move.
And that's not just weird, though. I think that's actually off-putting to a lot of people. I mean, it figuratively and literally, I would imagine, puts a strange taste in your mouth. And so if you were thinking of, like, where should we go for dinner? Ooh, how about that guy that puts breast milk in things? I think the average person's going to go, no, let's go somewhere else.
Although if you think about it, it's far more natural to actually, you know, ingest something that is made of human milk than of cow milk. That's, you know.
Well, therein lies the paradox, because say you go with the cow milk versus the human milk. Cow is a completely different animal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, human breast milk after a certain age becomes, well, that seems wrong or disturbing in some way. Where, in fact, it's more designed for your physiology.
Well, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it physically speaking or that it's unnatural. I'm just saying it's a thing that makes people go, ick.
Yeah.
My question was always, if therein lies that conundrum, you know, you see lions eating other animals usually, you know, at times, you know, rarely other lions, but it does happen on occasion. Why is it such a taboo, this is going to sound so weird, for a human to eat another human?
And that's something we came up with, I think, so that we just wouldn't – just so we wouldn't eat each other.
Are you really – I didn't know if that was a rhetorical question or if I was supposed to –
No, it's a legitimate – like, why is that such a out and out taboo. Like it just it should never be done and criminalized if it is.
No, I'm with Don. I think that's just a thing that people that is a self-preservation thing. That's a thing that some guy came up with because
but
the other people in the
die.
Tribe were eyeing him, you
yeah.
know, sort of they were looking at him and giving him the long hard stare yeah. and he went, yeah. We should have some of those laws put in place to do, you know, the whole
but, same reason we have incest taboos. It's not really because there's anything
but yeah.
you know, it's so that we don't have a bunch of retarded kids with six eyes.
But you know, the point is, I mean, if you're going to have intercourse with, you know, another human being, that's okay. But it has to be of a certain age. There are all these weird parameters that kind of get put into place. Obviously, you don't have sex with the food that you're eating. That would be just really weird.
Is one of us stoned today?
No. I'm actually as far from that as possible.
I wasn't even accusing you. It might be me. It might be Dawn. Maybe there's a radon leak.
Jim is thinking about stuff.
You don't have sex with your food as such.
Well, no.
Some people do.
Some people do. That's the thing.
But we do think it's kind of icky. Okay. I mean, those
yeah.
of us who don't have sex with food.
But it's just, you know, the whole idea that, like, when you're a kid— there is no set age that says after this point, breast milk is considered, you know.
Well, it's like, yeah, in Utah every now and again, when I lived there, there'd be some news story about a woman who was like breastfeeding her 12-year-old.
Yeah. I'm not trying to justify it in any way. I'm just curious as to why these things are in place as they are.
Well, I think that specifically is in place. I think the reason that we are as a society, and I know there are exceptions, but why most people, again, hear about drinking breast milk as an adult and they go, eh. I think it is the same reason you go, eh, when you think about humping your sister. Yeah. I think that nature instills things in you to separate from your parents specifically, from your family in general, and from your parents. I think that there are things that are inborn in you that activate at a certain age so that you do separate from home and leave. Physically,
yeah.
Because that's the only way that the species can advance and you can spread your, you know, whatever.
I just find it odd that you consume cow milk, but you wouldn't feed a cow human milk.
No, and it is interesting
you
that we
drive
have—
drive in a parkway.
You know, we— but, you
I'm, know, not, I'm not trying to make a joke out of it.
No, we decided at some point that cow milk was an acceptable food. And
well, it's because cows are an acceptable food.
But the thing is, though—
how do you know dude isn't?
But here's the thing is that most animal— the cow milk is an acceptable food because a cow gives a lot of milk. Those udders are huge, and they give a lot of milk. And that's, I think, the reason that we adapted ourselves to go, hey, cow milk, it's okay. You know why? Because it's plentiful. Because the thing is, you go, you know, hey, you want some milk and cow milk? And people go, cow milk would be great. You say to someone, do you want some goat milk? And a certain number of people will go, I'd really rather not have any goat milk. You say to someone, hey, you want a glass of dog milk? And they go, oh my God, no.
Well, it's the same reason that, yeah, that, you know, that we don't eat certain, you know, animals because they're cute. You know, things that are ugly, we will eat with impunity. Things that are cute, we typically don't eat.
Yeah.
I mean, we have all kinds of weird, bizarre, arbitrary things put in place. I mean, sometimes I think for evolutionary reasons, because again, I think, you know, because mankind to adapt and mankind to become and to remain the apex predator that we are at the top of the food chain. And I think one of the ways we do this is by spreading out. And I think if you were always just sticking close to home, you're not ever going to spread out. And so I think that their nature puts a lot of things in your brain that activated about the age of 13 and 14 to where you are driven to separate from your parents and to strike out on your own. And I think that's a lot of the thing where, like, the incest taboo that is inborn in a lot of people, most people, and like, which carries over to things like being revolted by the idea of drinking breast milk after a certain age. I think it is. I think any one of those things maybe doesn't have the effect, but I think nature puts a lot of little things like that into people, the cumulative result of which is that the human race eventually leaves home and spreads itself across the globe.
Okay.
That's just my take. I'm not an anthropologist, but that would be my guess. And when I was actually when I was snarking earlier, it's not like like Donald. I don't sit around and just navel gaze endlessly. Seriously, we talked about period blood for like an hour earlier today.
See, again, I miss the good stuff.
It's just that
first clown porn, now this.
If you want to talk about my period later with me after the show, I'll be happy to sit down and
done.
Really?
Okay.
So I mean, this is the show for those kinds of discussions. It was just that, like, in a course of about 15 seconds, you had like five of those questions all at once. Like, you know, why can't we drink human milk? Why can't I eat people? You know, and it was just.
I think Jim is just sort of feeling a little constrained right now.
Why isn't there a miniature cow I can keep in my pocket as a friend? You know, and I'm just like, I don't know.
And if I did, would it be wrong?
This show is the place where it's just these are what my wife would call. Lara has a name for these sorts of things, which I always have to quantify because you know, as we don't wish to give the wrong impression of how we spend our time. But Lara calls things like that stoned revelations, because they're all like the sorts of things that would occur to you when you're 20 and in your dorm room and high. You know, and you're going like, the Howls had so much luggage, man, but they were only touring for 3 hours. Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, and it's just like a thing that, you know, the thing that you wonder about where you go like, how does the electricity not dribble out of the outlet onto the floor, man? You know, and it's like the things or, you know, why can't you just be sticking a guy in a tureen? I don't have any reason why not. Although I will say, evolutionarily speaking, if you're going to consume other people, that is a thing that does actually have health consequences. If you consume the wrong parts of people, it will in fact give you brain damage. There is a disease called
mad cow.
It is exactly mad cow, but it's mad people. There's a disease called kuru, which you will get, and that is from consuming the brains of other human beings.
Well, okay.
So I'm just saying, if you're going to do that, it's like eating that Japanese blowfish. You got to get the right chef to prepare for you.
Yeah. Also,
somebody from Germany probably.
Also, never eat the liver of a bear.
Is that true?
Yes.
They're hard drinking bears.
Now, apparently, bear livers are. Have an excess amount of, I think it's vitamin D in them, to the point where it's actually toxic to humans.
That's interesting.
So you can eat pretty much any part of a bear except the liver. Never eat the bear's liver.
The more you know.
I'm sorry, it's vitamin A. Yes, they have a huge, so much vitamin A in a bear's liver that it exceeds any level that a human can eat without, like, dying.
I think it's pronounced vitamin. Ah, there's a bear!
This email says, are you aware that so far today you have discussed menstruation, sex with siblings, breast milk ice cream, clown porn, and eating other people?
And we're not done yet.
No, and that's, you know what?
Welcome to the Rick Emerson Show.
32 cents a day is all you pay for this.
Attention, potential sponsors.
You know, well, like, Bruce and Cheryl keep nagging me to find, like, you know, to put together, like, you know, that we have some sort of demo reel for the show or something we can just, like, a free sample that everybody can listen to. So they go, what am I missing that I'm not listening to the Rick Emerson Show? What would my 32 cents a day get me? I think we've found our demo show.
What it should be is, like, you send out kind of like a touchpad where there's just a listing of all these weird, like period blood and,
right.
Like, you know, eating bears. And then, like, you know, touch on the thing you don't think the Rick Emerson Show talks about.
Oh, totally. Like a reverse bingo.
Yeah.
Which subject have we not discussed today?
Wrong.
Wrong. Wrong. And you just touch it, and it just prouts up the date so that if you ever subscribe, you can go right to that show.
And at the bottom, you know, the only thing left would be, you know, like actual world events and impactful news items that are relevant to your real life. Well, let's do like one more here, and we'll take a brief break, and we'll come back, and we'll get caught up on the other side.
Well, we have to talk about Charlie Sheen. Have to.
Let me see if I can get some of that sound up here. All right.
Because you gave me Sheen 1 and Sheen 2 over
well,
here.
And we got,
and then you've got just
tons. I've got, the other two cuts that I gave you on that second page, and then in addition to that, let me be sure that I get this brought up here. In addition to that, I've got just a bunch of raw audio that he gave.
Well, before we start listening to that, all you really need to know is that Charlie Sheen went on a crazy attack over the course of, what, about 16, 18 hours?
Yeah.
Making phone calls, sending emails, writing stuff on Facebook. He's in the Bahamas with some porn stars. One of them left because he's, like, too crazy.
Wow.
He called a bunch of radio shows, including the Alex Jones Show. And Alex Jones is himself something of a whack job, if you've ever heard him. And talked and just everything that Charlie Sheen said via phone to the Alex Jones Show is gold.
It was nonstop crazy. I mean, it was just, and so I've got those two cuts specifically.
So, one of the things, he took a number of what he took to, we'll talk about this later, he took a lot of shots at the creator of Two and a Half Men, Chuck Lorre, among them calling him Chaim Levine.
Well, that's the thing is, that's the only name he would refer to him by. So Chuck Lorre, obviously, you know, like many people.
And Chuck Lorre's given name is Charles Levine.
Yeah.
He actually changed his name from Levine, but he kept calling him Chaim Levine.
Yeah, that was like the only way he would refer to the guy during the interview is referring to him by his Hebrew designation.
And he also called him a turd and a clown. And
also that.
Yes. And he also has some feelings about Alcoholics Anonymous.
This is what?
One.
Bootleg cult, you know, arrogantly referred to as Alcoholics Anonymous, is Alex supports a 5% success rate. My success rate is 100%. Do the math.
By the way, he referred to it today. He referred to Chuck Lorre who, of course, is Jewish, as a Nazi. So, you know, that's a little extra flourish from Charlie Sheen.
They hide in the least likely of places.
Yeah, he Laurie bore the brunt of Sheen's attack during the radio interview and a subsequent open letter sent to TMZ that Sheen wrote to TMZ after CBS Warner announced that they were canceling Two and a Half Men based on, quote, the totality of Charlie Sheen's statements, conduct, and condition. Sheen wrote to TMZ about this, in which he called Chuck Lorre a contaminated little maggot and wished the producer nothing but pain. He wrote, clearly, I have defeated this earthworm with my words. Imagine what I would have done with my fire-breathing fists.
God damn.
Wow, his fists breathe fire.
So here he is talking about his recent trip to rehab. Here, number two.
I embarrassed him in front of his children and the world by healing at a pace that his unevolved mind cannot process.
Doesn't Chuck Lorre also do the Big Bang Theory?
Yes, he does.
That's the thing about this is that, like, the reason that Charlie Sheen is so screwed here is because so WB Television has a syndication deal, of course, for Two and a Half Men. Syndication deals are incredibly lucrative, so they're going to get screwed out of, like, you know, $40 million by not having any more Two and a Half Men to syndicate. But they'll pay that because they don't want to lose Chuck Lorre, because Chuck Lorre created Two and a Half Men, he created The Big Bang Theory, and he created Mike and Molly, which is coming up, about which the advance word is very
Greg.
Good. Yeah, and they're going to they would be triply screwed if they were to lose Chuck Lorre. So whatever it is that they're going to have to eat to get rid of Charlie Sheen, they're going to eat just so they don't alienate Chuck Lorre, because they can't lose that guy.
Well, and also one of the things apparently that Sheen is angry about, at the end of every episode of Chuck Lorre's shows, he started doing this during Dharma and Greg, he has this thing called a vanity card where it comes up with the title of the show and his name.
And you got 3 nanoseconds to read it all.
Right, but he writes a bunch of different stuff for each time. He does it on Big Bang Theory as well, and you have to, like, kind of TiVo it and pause it to read it, and they're generally pretty funny. After the abrupt cancellation of the show, he changed the vanity card that came up at the end of the last episode, which will apparently now be the last episode, I guess, of Three and a Half Men. And it read, it was more fun writing these things when I was fairly certain no one was reading them. That is no longer the case. These days, it seems like every vanity card is getting scrutinized. Oh, let's see. Where is the thing you wrote?
Are you talking about the thing where he says...
anyway, he ended the thing with saying, yeah, if Charlie Sheen outlives me, I'll be very angry.
Well, he said...
oh, there it is.
He says, I exercise regularly. I eat moderate amounts of healthy food. I make sure to get plenty of rest. I see my doctor once a year and my dentist twice a year. I floss every night. I've had chest x-rays, cardio stress tests, EKGs, and colonoscopies. I see a psychologist. I have a variety of hobbies to reduce stress. He continues, I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I don't have crazy, reckless sex with strangers. If Charlie Sheen outlives me, I'm going to be really pissed.
Yeah. So, anyway, while he was talking to Alex Jones, Charlie Sheen, Alex Jones told Charlie Sheen, he sounded like Thomas Jefferson. Do you have that quote, that one?
Where he says Thomas Jefferson was a pussy?
Yeah.
I'll just have a little bit of this here.
Pull something random. Anything will be good.
This, I think, is the first, let's see, I think this might be the first segment that he does with the...
Well, Charlie, I mean, I tell you, it is amazing. I just appreciate you coming on today so folks can really hear the energized, unleashed Charlie Sheen. You wanted to talk about AA because, you know, when I was at your house, I said, man, great job being completely sober and, you know, how important it was.
But I can't use the word sober because that's a term from those people. And I have cleansed myself. I closed my eyes and in a nanosecond, I cured myself from this ridiculous model of disease and addiction and obsession. It's just the work of sissies. The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning, you know? This bootleg cult, you know, arrogantly referred to as Alcoholics Anonymous, Alex, supports a 5% success rate. My success rate is 100%. Do the math. Take, for instance, its founder, a desperate and, I don't know, broken-down plagiarist, stayed high on acid until the day he died. I can't seem to find that chapter in his silly book of lies. And then, Alex, try to get your mind around this as a fellow warrior deep in the trenches. their entire manifesto is built upon.
By the way, this is when he says that the thing I'm addicted to is winning. He used that phrase again later when he issued this press release saying that he was in talks with HBO for a brand new series for which he would be paid $5 million an episode, and that they were willing to give him a production deal, right? You know, and of course HBO just immediately said he's never called us, we've never talked to Charlie Sheen at all. But he put out this whole thing saying that he was ready to walk off Two and a Half Men because he was going to be paid $5 million an episode to do this show called Sheen's Corner on HBO, which is just glorious.
To kill another part of me, which is Kurtz, I am every character in between, save for that little weirdo with his guts strapped in begging for water. That's not me. But, you know, there are parts of me that are Dennis Hopper, because my motto now is you either love or you hate, and you must do so violently. And the reason you must hate violently is because, and you have to hate everybody that's not in your family, because they're there to destroy your family. And they will come at you in all forms and shapes. And therefore, there's nothing in the middle. I don't live in the middle anymore. That's where you get slaughtered. That's where you get embarrassed in front of the prom queen. And it's just not an option.
Who's the prom queen in this scenario?
I'm really not
Nietzsche,
sure.
Nietzsche, obviously.
Boy, somebody's been watching Apocalypse Now like over and over
in
and over
dark
and
room.
Over again.
So, but, you know, within that is tremendous focus and tremendous clarity and tremendous peace, because you have absolute and total resolve about your decisions. If you love with violence and you hate with violence, there's nothing that can be questioned. And people say, oh, you know, you're going to work through your resentments. Yeah, no, I'm going to hang on to them, and they're going to fuel my attack. And they're going to fuel the battle cry of my deadly and dangerous sight.
You star on a sitcom with John Cryer. I mean, what is the attack happening here?
Oh, my God. Is he, like, mainlining Gary Busey into his bloodstream?
Secret and silent soldiers, because they're all around you.
All the time.
Anyway, thought you were just messing with one dude. Sorry. Winning.
Wow.
Gary Busey is actually looking at Charlie Sheen right now and going, that guy is crazy.
Oh, let's see what else.
When I was there 2 weeks ago at your house, you look.
Let's see.
You know, tell folks the truth about it. But the point is that it seems like there's some people in your life that are trying to demonize you. They're doing these vanity cards, talking about how they're going to outlive you. It seems pretty darn aggressive.
Yeah, I didn't care about that vanity card. In fact, I went straight on with that one and just dispelled that. And that was actually, one of the few compliments that clown has paid me in freaking almost a decade. But
I dispelled that.
Is part of his whole magically closing his eyes and wishing himself sober thing, just wishing things away to the cornfield?
Maybe.
Is he has he turned into Billy Mummy?
I'm excited to get back to work, and not to completely discount what you just talked about. It's just if I bring up these turds, these little homunculus losers, there's no reason to then, you know, bring them back into the fold, because I have real fame. They have nothing. They have zero. They have that night, and I will forget about them as the last image of them exits my beautiful home, and they will get out there and they will sell me, and then they will lose. And
the thing is, like,
it's saying words, but they don't really make any sense.
That's one of those. It's one of those Eddie Izzard things where it's like, if you just didn't speak English, but you heard the tone and timbre of his voice and the way he was delivering it, you go, he clearly understands what he's saying, and he's making a strong point very passionately and aggressively and a very concise. But then if you actually stop and look at the words, you go, well, there's no actual – none of this makes any sense. This is just a bunch of crap that he found, like, in the Scrabble box of his mind that he's sort of just throwing out.
They lose the rest of their lives as they think about me. And my life, the rest of their life. So it's just, there's no, it's, again, bring me a challenge, somebody. Bring me a freaking challenge, because, you know, it just ain't there. Winning.
But you're ready Winning. To go back to work right now.
Well, yeah, but Alex, I gotta tell you, man, and I'm tired of being told, like, oh, you can't talk about that, you can't talk about that. Bull, S-H-I-T. Let me just say this, that it's nothing decided deplorable that a certain Haim Levine, yeah, that's Chuck's real name, mistook this rock star for his own selfish exit strategy, bro. Check it, Alex. I embarrassed him in front of his children and the world by healing at a pace that his unevolved mind cannot process. Okay, last I checked, Haim, I've spent, I think, close to the last decade, I don't know, effortlessly and magically converting your tin cans into pure gold. And the gratitude I get in this get is this charlatan chose not to do his job, which is to write.
I mean, it's like this goes on for like another 12 minutes. I mean, it's just pure. It's just it's pure gold.
So, and apparently, because there have been, you know, some reactions to this sort of thing, the Anti-Defamation League was unhappy with his whole Chaim Levine thing, and Sheen wrote apparently sent a text message to People Magazine telling them that their reporting on all of this was way off base, and they were stirring things up and getting stuff out of context. And then, as far as the Anti-Defamation League thing, where they said that what he was saying was at best bizarre and at worst borderline anti-Semitism, Sheen countered that, well, Chuck Lorre had often referred to Sheen by his given name, Carlos Estevez. Does that make him anti-Spanish American or Latin America? And as for his responding to all of these people who are responding to him being crazy, he says, he writes, this is me warming up.
Yeah.
I think it's time for a Sheen watch.
But seriously, really, you're right about this. And somebody just nails
Ring.
It. They say that just like one can ascend and become pure thought, Charlie Sheen has become a being of pure cocaine.
Entertainment Weekly writer Ken Tucker suggests that Sheen may be entitled to a little sympathy. He says, my sense is that Charlie Sheen isn't fully himself right now.
Excellent. That thing of ending every sentence with winning is awesome.
Winning!
Hey, let's do this. Let's all agree to do that throughout the weekend.
Okay.
Just no matter where you go, no matter what it is you're doing, I want everybody just to end your conversation with winning and then just stare real hard for a second or so. Awesome. We'll knock that put a bird on it thing like right off right out of everybody's consciousness. Awesome. We'll take a break. We'll come back. After now, I've started to talk like Alex Cox. We'll come back after this. Alex Cox. Alex Jones, who is, by the way, crazy. I mean, you really know when you said he himself is nuts.
Yeah.
Good God almighty. All right. Back after this with Mr. Big Jim Willig and another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Stay right there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere.
Winning!
To the Emerson News Network.
In the box, get the water right down to your socks. This bulkhead's built of fallen brethren bones. We all do what we can, we endure our fellow man, and we sing our songs to the head frames, creeps and moans. And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of the lee. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back in line. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And you won't make a dime on this gray granite mountain mine. Of dirt you're made, and the dirt you will return. So while we're living here, let's get this little one thing clear. There's plenty of men to die, you don't jump your turn. And it's 1, 2, 3 on the wrong side of the lead. What were you meant for? What were you meant for? And it's 7, 8, 9, you get your shuffle back. If you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. Make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if
you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It's the Rich Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time once again. We welcome now to the Rich Emerson Radio Program with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Mr. Big Jim Willig. Hello, sir.
Thank you very much, Rick Emerson. Now, the biggest downside to working in comedy is being taken seriously. It seems all that misdirection, flatulence, humor, and falling down on fruit tends to make it hard for people to trust you. Now, imagine, if you will, trying to be a woman working in comedy, and you've just carved yourself out a nice uphill climb. Just for kicks, let's say that you were a woman working in comedy around 1930, and your uphill climb just turned into an attempt at Everest. In March, while dragging John Goodman and Burl Ives in a rickshaw made of lightning. It was a different time back then, hell, a different world. Women were seen as nothing more than stage dressing. That's for those lucky few who were allowed to wear clothes. But Lucille Ball refused to be put down or cast off and cultivated a career that to this day is still unparalleled. Being raised by a single parent in New York? Easy. Struggling to get noticed while in the shadows of classmates like Betty Davis? Child's play. Being married to a Cuban around the time of our little missile thingy? No sweat. Lucille Ball seemed like she was an ironclad warrior of entertainment, all while hosting the most popular and groundbreaking sitcom in television history. Lucy and Desi were the all-American couple, helping to promote only the most wholesome of family-oriented products, such as...
Vitamita Vegemin contains vitamins, meat, vegetables, and minerals. Yes, with Vitamita Vegemin, you can spoon your way to health.
All right, not that commercial. Try the other one.
How about a good night cigarette, Ricky?
Thank you, Lucy. Nothing but the best, huh?
Natch, nothing but Philip Morris.
Sure tastes good. And you know something, Lucy? When you find a good friend, well, you kind of like to pass it along to your friends.
That means you. Have you tried a Philip Morris lately?
You'll love them. They're so smooth and mild, and they taste so good.
And most important, there's no cigarette hangover when you smoke Philip Morris.
That's right. That's what we say. You'll be glad tomorrow.
You smoke Philip Morris today.
Good night.
Cigarette hangover? You mean cancer? Yes, a different time indeed. From Goldwyn Girl to the first woman to ever own her own film studio as head of Desilu Productions, Lucy was a hard-drinking, no-nonsense, fire-crotched pioneer. And the world loved her for it. With that, I turn the heart light on America's other sweethearts, Mr. Rick Emerson and Don Taylor. Your thoughts on Lucille Ball.
Don?
Oh, I got nothing right now.
Your mind's still back on Firecrotch?
I'm processing Firecrotch.
Yeah.
Firecrotch pioneer.
Lucy and I'm doing that thing that America did, like I just knew her, like she was next door or something.
There was always that feeling. I think that's where the appeal kind of comes from.
She's fascinating because she, to an even greater extent than like Gracie Allen, Lucille Ball, I mean, she knew where her bread was buttered. And so she cultivated and guarded that image of her as being the ditzy, you know, not brainless, but flighty housewife.
Yeah.
You know, just as Gracie Allen did. But just like Gracie was, you know, far, far more involved and smarter behind the scenes than people probably thought, so was Lucille Ball. But to a much, much greater degree. And when you look back now, I mean, even now it's difficult to imagine the fact that she had, not just in real life, but was also had an on-screen marriage to a Cuban man.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, at that time, I can't I don't know how they got away with it. I mean, I really don't. It is astonishing that somebody, when you think about the things that weren't allowed on television and the things that got edited out, and if you look back at the way that they refer to the episodes of I Love Lucy when she was pregnant, where they were actually never allowed to say the word pregnant, the network actually brought in a panel of religious experts from every different faith and denomination, and they asked a rabbi, and they asked a priest, and they asked a Methodist minister, like, how can we refer to her? And they came up with expecting and with child, and that's the way that she's referred to in the series. They never say pregnant because they figured that the other terms were things that wouldn't offend any denomination anywhere. And so if it's done through this perspective of what can we do that won't offend anybody anywhere ever, and yet, by the way, she has a Cuban husband and everybody's fine with that, it's just astounding that that was allowed on the air. And it's a demonstration of how much faith they must have had in her and the clout that she already had by dint of having been a performer for many, many years before that.
Yeah, it's almost as if, like, Taylor Swift were to marry a member of the Taliban and then have a sitcom about it, which, granted, probably would get pretty good ratings.
If we could
get
a note
Charlie
right now.
Sheen as the wacky neighbor, I'm sure right there it's just a license to print money. Yeah, honestly, she knew, Lucille Ball knew that the best way to make it, and not just make it, but to really kind of almost change the game, was to go along with it. She could fight and be like, no, I'm not a ditzy blonde. I'm not an idiot. You know, I've got my own head on my own shoulders. And she knew that you're basically fighting upstream.
Right.
So she decided to go with the current and be like, yeah, you're right. No, I'm an idiot. I'm a blah, blah, blah. And at the same time, work in her own agenda and have that eventually become the final way of things. She, I Love Lucy was the first sitcom. I mean, it's so bizarre. She was the first sitcom to utilize the three different cameras.
Right.
And from there, I mean, that's to this day is still part of, like, the Bible of television.
Well, the things, I'm sorry, I had a mouthful of ice there. Most of the things that people think of now, and when you visualize the typical television sitcom, no matter what the setup is, no matter what the premise is, no matter who stars in it, 80% of the sitcoms you see on the air today still use all of the setups and all of the approaches that she designed and developed, or perfected at least. The things that really came to the fore via I Love Lucy. I mean, that is a template. Very few people you can look back and you say that they created something and fashioned a template that is still used by the majority of the practitioners of that art form 50 years later. And she's one of the few that can say that.
Yeah, no, because the three-camera setup, I think it had originally been used on a game show on Truth or Consequences. And I think it was Ralph Edwards, the game show pioneer. He was the first one to do that. And then
was it pre-Bob Barker?
Yes.
Okay.
And then they started filming the TV version of Amos and Andy and used it. And they found really quickly they were able to save money with it. So it's like people believe that I Love Lucy was the first time anybody ever used the three-camera setup. And it's not. But it was, like, so fabulously successful that it did basically, you know, set in stone that this was the way TV shows were going to be done from here on out.
So it was basically the first one to gain that level of success using that formula that has already been out there,
yeah,
so that they kind of get the first, like, kind of like what Xerox is to copy.
Well, and she did what a lot of people in entertainment do. You know, it's that thing of looking around and seeing what everybody is doing and being shrewd enough to understand which of those elements to appropriate into your own. You know, people have this idea that it's enough, I think, in entertainment to just sort of steal somebody else's act. And you know this from being a comic, that you can steal somebody else's jokes, I guess, but that isn't really, you know, it's the way that you deliver them and it's what they're bracketed with.
Yeah.
You can't just Xerox somebody else's act whole cloth. If you are using elements and components and things that somebody else has come up with, it's the idea of taking them and making them into your own sort of melange and knowing which ideas are the correct ones. And it's like the thing of the zany next door neighbors and the idea of having basically a foursome where there was the couple that were the center of the show and then they were their best friends. That had been done before, you know, on radio for years and years. But I Love Lucy in many ways put. They put the definitive spin on that, you know, for the next 30 or 40 years. They were along with the Honeymooners. I mean, that was really an imprint that every sitcom bore.
And you know, people do talk a lot about how absolutely hilarious Lucy was at physical comedy, and that's absolutely true. But over the years, it's like Desi has gotten an enormous amount of credit for being, you know, the businessman. But in reality, it's like she's one of those people, sort of like when we're looking at someone like Madonna, and you admire her as much for her business savvy as you and just and just her sheer energy in promoting her career. And Lucille Ball was really similar. I mean, she started out as a teenager as, like, essentially a chorus girl, as a Goldwyn girl.
Yeah.
You know, doing walk-ons in the backgrounds of movies when, well, we need a pretty girl in this scene. You know, we need somebody to sit on the side of, like, a fake fountain in a bathing suit. And that's what she did. Worked her way up to, you know, to walk-on parts, to bit parts, to small comedic roles. And then she was doing... the
Roman Sandals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was doing the radio show, my favorite brunette, I guess it was, my favorite husband, my favorite husband, which was the precursor to the I Love Lucy show. And they came to her and wanted her to do it on television. I think it was, I can't remember who it was originally that approached her, CBS, I think it was, for television. And she said, well, I want to do it with my husband, Desi Arnaz. And they were like, no, you know, he's Cuban and no one knows who he is. And so what she did was she went on the road with a stage show. She actually put together a sketch comedy vaudeville show with Ricky and his orchestra and went and took it on the road. And actually was able to go back to CBS and say, look how much money we made. Look how many asses we put in seats. These people will watch our TV show.
Yeah.
And CBS went, well, okay, I guess you got a point. And she did that. You know, she actually ended up getting the thing on the air.
Yeah, and the moxie aspect that you were talking about is very much true, too. It's hard enough to make it in the entertainment business, but to do it where you're doing it by your standards and your standards alone, refusing to allow anyone else to kind of put their augmentation on it, it's exhausting to do it that way. Because you're basically, you're reinventing the wheel and then building the road beneath it upon which it's going to run. And then, like, to have that road still be here 50 years later, you know, yeah, she had a lot of, you know, a negativity around her personal life. But how do you just shut that kind of aspect off when you're having to fight this battle, not just for yourself, but, you know, dare I say, for all women in the entertainment business, to actually have to do that and then have to turn around and soften it up for your own family? She was married twice. And both marriages lasted 20 years, at least.
Well, and I know that that there was, and you just kind of sort of alluded to this, and I don't know the whole story, but I know that there was a lot of, her marriage to Ricky Ricardo was not ideal.
No.
I think George Burns charitably described it as his occasionally wandering eye was how, that was the most they could ever get George Burns to say about it. But he also said that, and I don't think this is because she was a woman who had to be tethered to a man for success. I think part of it has to be credited to the fact that she knew she was business savvy enough to realize what made, you know, what, as Don said, what put the asses in the seat, you know, what worked and what was needed to make that engine run. And the dynamic between her and Ricky Ricardo was so important, you know, in a creative sense, that she was just willing to some degree, to swallow a part of that because she knew that's what the business model had to have.
Yeah.
To work. I actually don't know a lot about what she did in terms of film work and in terms of things before I Love Lucy. She's one of those people who, to me, has become such a ubiquitous part of the culture that I can't step back and sort of see her devoid of context. I've made the observation.
She made a lot of B movies. She was one of those actresses that was in a lot of B movies. She also was like the pretty girl in like Three Stooges shorts and things like that.
That's what I was going to say. I've made the observation before that I can't. I know intellectually that Lucille Ball's an attractive woman, but there's no way. I don't think I've ever been able to find her attractive or sexy because I've just grown up with her being. Not even a character on television, just a thing. I mean, this, in a weird way, Lucille Ball is sort of like Mickey Mouse. She's just a thing that you saw on television and everywhere you went all the time. She's almost become literally an icon in the sense of just an aesthetic presence, image.
Almost as if she's always been there.
Yeah.
And then to imagine, you know, how things were prior to her being on the scene. Like I said, they were basically, women were mostly just there for comedic appeal or pause or, you know, to attract attention to the male lead, the male star. It wasn't imaginable that a female could have that level of play. And she knew that she couldn't just take the full point. She needed, like you said, to have the rest of the entertainment game plan. She needed to have a male to sort of help lead that way. I know that the marriage was already starting to fail when the show kind of took off. So, I mean, you have to deal with the fact that You're bringing on all these special guests from time to time. You're trying to...
a glamour shot of Lucy from her B-movie days, by the way.
And see, it's, you know, it's one of those things where you look back and you realize that in some alternate universe, she was on a more traditional career path that you can't now imagine her taking because she imprinted her image so strongly.
We all think of her as being so funny, and it's easy to overlook the fact that she was just stunningly gorgeous.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and you know, I saw a lot of the clips from the Dean Martin comedy roasts, and how she could give just as well as she took. It really was. She was one of those women that you say that she did in fact have balls; they were just mounted higher.
Awesome. That's your installment of Humor Meet Comedy 101 for this week. Once again, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Who are we talking about next week? Do you know? Have you decided? Do you wish to reveal?
I'm debating. I know that Bob Newhart has been one I've been kind of toying with.
Bob Newhart.
Which, you know, just truly a man that kind of like made his own... made his own kind of style. He would be the old dirty bastard in this particular. No real father to his style in that capacity. But I'm sure that Bob Newhart fans everywhere are tired of the old dirty bastard a parallel being drawn between the two.
If I had a nickel.
Yeah, but I'm probably going to do him next week as well.
Awesome.
Real quick, I do have a comedy show that I'll be doing tomorrow night at a place called The Agenda. It's on 82nd Avenue. For more information, check me out on Facebook at Facebook JWillig1, or just type in Big Jim Willig and just take you right there. Thanks to one of our listeners.
Yeah, I was just going to say, really? Because I was about to say, you know, I'm just going to buy you the domain and just give you a redirect. I'm just going to buy you a domain and a redirect, and really not just for you. That's for me. It's just so I don't mangle your Facebook address another week in a row. All right. Big Jim Willig, ladies and gentlemen, type in Big Jim Willig and you'll be magically directed to his online home. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Before we do anything else, we should give clue number 5 for this week's Name That Snack Contest from E.H. Vending. Don Taylor?
What?
You're doing that thing again, yes?
I'm not. I'm just saying you're trying not to laugh because I'm in something in my own head.
Just go ahead and share it with everyone.
Well, he was talking about Bob Newhart. He was struggling for a word at one point. He was saying Bob Newhart is a man who made his own, and I kept thinking gravy. A man who made his own gravy. And then I was cracking myself up.
Winning!
Well done. Here's a little thing.
I was trying not to.
Here's a little comedic telepathy going on right there, because I was hoping that that's exactly what you would do, Big Jim, and you did not disappoint me on that score.
I'm your comedic wingman. Call me Goose.
All right. It's the Rick Evers Radio Program. Clue number 5 for this week's Name That Snack Contest. Comes out here in just a moment. Brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them by going to ehvending.com or calling 503-897-8204. Here in Portland, or if you're in Vancouver, you can call 360-816-1853. That is 360-816-1853. So if you are forming a business, you're operating a business, you're going to be starting a brand new company, and maybe you haven't got your vending situation taken care of, you contact EH Vending and they'll find a way to put it together in a way that works with your budget. If maybe your current vending provider doesn't come by, or the guy's a jackass, or he has offensive body odor in some way, or he just gives you stale-ass Twizzlers all the time instead of something good, you talk to EH Vending and they will make sure that that they solve that in a way that's going to work for your pocketbook as well as for the happiness and contentment of your employees. Whether you're looking for a coffee service or a regular soda machine or a snack machine or anything in between or a combination of the above, they can make it work. And they specialize in finding budget solutions for people who have only one or two locations, or maybe looking to scale down a bit in these trying economic times. You can find them at ehvending.com, ehvending.com, or 360-816-1853 or 503-897-8204. Here comes clue number 5 for this week's EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. Again, once we've given out this 5th clue, the first person to correctly email and identify this snack correctly at snack@rickemerson.com will win a... and by the way, I just went into the kitchen just now during the break, and EH Vending, they crept in like elves, like magical candy gnomes, and they dropped off, I think, 15 more bags of stuff to give away.
Really?
Yeah. So you will be the recipient of one of those if you were the first person to correctly identify this snack at snack@rickemerson.com. Oh, by the way, before I even do that...
Don Taylor.
Oh, what?
Guess what I got for you.
Jim, can you have me my coat there, that wool coat that's on the back, hanging
well,
up the chair?
Well, if it's in your coat, it's not what I was thinking it was going to be.
Well, how do you know?
I'm not sure. What?
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 Oh, pretzel M&M's.
Okay, I demand that you
try them.
I demand that you try them right now.
Okay.
Before I give out the clue. Have you tried pretzel M&M's, Jim?
Oh my
God,
I'm about
to. They're fantastic.
I like the orange ones.
Oh, yeah.
I'm saying right now, they're so good, they have, within just weeks of their introduction, they became my favorite M&M flavor. I'm including the regular, the peanut, all the traditional flavors. They have become the best brand of M&M. They're either better than the peanut butter ones, which I didn't think was possible. They are fantastic.
Here.
They're just like tiny little chocolate-covered pretzels.
And you know what? It's
in a handy ball-shaped form.
It's several things. It's a little bit, just a tiny, tiny little hint of salt, not a lot, and more than anything, it's the snap of the pretzel. Thank you, John.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the snap and the crunch of the pretzel inside. It's a very particular kind of crunch. Not like having, like when you have the like the peanut M&M's or whatever. There's that, and they have almond M&M's, good as well. The nut there, it's a certain kind of snap. This pretzel, though, is, I mean, it's extra crisp.
And I just dissected mine a little bit to take a look at it, because I was thinking that might be like broken up pretzel pizzas. But no, to make this these all uniform, because, you know, M&M Marms don't make crap. That's actually like little, like sort of peanut M&M-sized pretzels.
Yeah.
Round pretzel covered in chocolate and then the candy coating.
It's like a pretzel buckshot.
I was going to say.
Right to your mouth.
It's
It's like miniature donut holes, but they're pretzels, and then they're stuck inside the M&Ms. They're wonderful.
They're delightful.
And so I'm saying right now, if you're saying, vending, schmending, like what would I even put in it? The answer is nothing but pretzel M&Ms.
This makes up for the disappointment of the coconut M&Ms, which blow.
They were ass.
Oh, God.
They were not good. No, and I love coconut, and they were bad. They're a bad thing. And I didn't care for those cherry cordial M&Ms either. So it's a little bit of hit and miss with M&M. These, though, I haven't found anybody that doesn't love these. Everybody can agree on these. They're fantastic. Clue number five is Robert Downey Jr. There it is. Clue number five, Robert Downey Jr. So the first person to correctly identify that snack via snack@rickemerson.com, you win yourself a big bag full of stuff from E.H. Vending. That is E.H. By the way, our most recent winner lives in Scotland. So that'll be a fun trip to the post office.
Yeah.
Maybe asking everybody for some spare change on the way there. So that's a snack@rickemerson.com. snack@rickemerson.com. Awesome. All right. Well, we should probably bring the curtain down on everything right about now, ladies and gentlefolk. Don't forget, coming up on 4 o'clock, you can watch, if you are listening to this live, over at trailblazers.tv at 4 o'clock Pacific. Trailblazers.tv, you can see Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler, hosts of Sportlandia for the Trailblazers and for the NBA. You can watch that at trailblazers.tv.
Does not have a bird on it.
No, it does not. No way does it have a bird on
it. No.
Seamus was suggesting that we just start putting middle fingers on everything. You know? As a way to sort of take that back for ourselves, to re-empower our use of that phrase. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every week here in the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and our special guest today, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Just type in bigjimwillig.com. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening, and thank you for spreading the word. It never goes unappreciated.
Winning!
Thank you. It's Friday, February 25th, 2011. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program, and so forth. It is Friday, February 25th, 2011. That is the frequency, Kenneth. Thank you all for listening. Be safe. Have a good weekend. See you on Monday. Bye now.